Hello, Internet, and welcome to the Snow Covered Lands Podcast, Episode 2. I'm your host, Nick Bond, and sitting next to me at the table is, again, Mr. Eric Bondby. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing all right. It's been a long morning. We might need more coffee.
Yeah, we had some audio issues, but we fixed it. We're good. We played some Magic. We had some coffee.
Yes. Yeah. We tested out some new decks, both of us.
Yeah. How did you feel about that? So Eric and I played a couple games before we started recording to kind of get us in the mindset.
Indeed, we did.
So what deck were you playing?
I was playing a Yahini deck, a quickly thrown together Yahini Voltron deck. And you were playing?
I was playing Surak Dragonclaw. Mm-hmm. I had a Karanos, God of the Storms deck that was kind of like a color shifted, I guess you would call it, deck where it was a blue-red deck, but it was just playing big blue-red creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually decided that if I was going to do that, I may as well go all out, put some green in, get some good ramp, and some big green creatures. I like it. It's fun. It plays a bunch of big creatures.
Do you like it more than you like the Karanos build?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, it's because like the Karanos build, all the ramp came from artifacts, and that is super easy to disrupt.
Yeah, very fragile.
Whereas land ramp just isn't. And the green creatures that I do have in there are quite good. Like I play Vigor, Bane of Progress, that sort of stuff. And I've wanted to build a teamer deck for a while.
Yeah.
And this seems good. Yeah, he's a solid guy.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else in the Magic world that's been going on with you?
No, not really. I'm still trying to sort out which decks I'm going to, because I'm on a quest to have decks that stay together for a long time.
Oh, yes.
I think one of them is going to be Kresh. I think I've kind of, I looked at the idea of the deck list again, and I just get to play a very high volume of pet cards of mine. Okay. Cards I really like to play. I get to play, like, in green, Pathbreaker Ibex, Colonian Hydra, Centaur Vinecrasher. All of these are cards that make a lot of sense. In terms of the red, I get to play Malignus and Xenagos and Urabrask.
Mm.
And in terms of, like, the black, I'm using pretty low threshold of black cards.
Is it like mostly removal and stuff?
It's a little bit of removal, a little bit of tutoring, a little bit of card draw, a little bit of recursion, but just a tiny bit. It's a gruel deck with a little bit of black oil in it to help the whole engine run, which is kind of like how I like my Jund.
Yeah, that sounds good. And I know you enjoy playing that deck.
Yes, I do. It has a lot of extremely high power cards in it.
Yeah.
And that's big dumb beaters.
Yep. So I know this is a commander centric podcast, but I actually went to my first ever sealed tournament yesterday.
And you did well.
I did quite well. So I took sixth place out of 32 people.
I mean, top eight. That's pretty good.
I went 3-1-1.
Oh, that's super good. I didn't even know that a tie was on the record. Yeah, that's super good.
Yeah, it felt good. I mean, I opened a Chandra from Kaladesh, the 4-mana one, which
probably helped.
Definitely carried me a couple of games, but yeah, it's good. Like, I'm not at all a competitive player.
Mm-hmm.
I don't go out and play people outside of like our sort of play group.
Yeah.
So it was a very different experience for me, but yeah, everyone was super friendly. It was nice.
Yeah.
I played against a small child.
Who apparently was super good.
Yeah, he was probably He played the best of any of the opponents I played, so I don't know what that says. Like, if I got off easy, or if everyone else there was not great, or if he was just really good.
I bet you he's, like, the son of a guy who plays a lot of Magic, and he's just gotten good because he's trying to beat his dad.
Yes.
I bet that's what it is.
Yeah.
Like, that's what makes the most sense to me, anyway.
That's why I played a lot of Scrabble when I was younger.
Yeah.
My dad's very wordy, so I definitely played a lot of that trying to figure it out.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, it's a good time. This limited format is pretty cool. If you want to learn more about that, I would say listen to Limited Resources. They go through each card in the set every time a set comes out and talks about it in, like, from the point of limited. So I would say go listen to that. They're long episodes. They're like 4.5 hours or something like that. So that is it for kind of our news and kind of weekly roundup. So we'll be moving on to the set that we're doing, which this week we are doing Mercadian Masks.
Yes, we are.
It's a set that, like, I kind of just picked out of the air to do, because, like...
Well, no. You picked out of the air not to do it, and then I said, nah, there's a bunch of really good cards in that set.
Yeah, like, it was kind of as a joke, because I didn't know a whole lot about this. I heard the name, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that sounds like a goofy set. Let's do that. And Eric told me, like, no, this is actually a pretty powerful set.
I mean, powerful is a strong word. The cards that are from it that people play are very, very good. It doesn't have a crazy high yield of powerful cards, but the ones that people do play are staple kind of hallmark cards.
Yeah. It's actually kind of interesting. So a couple facts about Mercadian Mask that I found out in my research. It's the first set that is actually free from Wizards Reserve List.
Yeah.
So that means they can reprint any cards from that without having to worry about any of that. Which kind of makes sense. Like, it's the first set after the Urza's Block. And a bunch of those cards are super powerful and rare and very expensive.
Yes.
So for this one to be free from that, I guess that kind of makes sense. And we have seen cards from the set reprinted in, like, the Commander Precons and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I thought that was sort of neat. And the other one is that it was actually made purposefully to be underpowered because it came out right after the Urza's Block.
So whenever Magic screws up and prints a set that's too powerful, they kind of get gun-shy for the next set or two and try and scale it back.
Yeah, you were saying we saw the same thing after the Mirrodin Block?
Yeah, Kamigawa was famously kind of, a lot of people felt overall it was an underpowered set because it was so, well, there was two big things. One, it came right after Mirrodin, where they got really gun shy because Mirrodin was insanely powerful. That single block spawned entire new archetypes for Legacy. Like, the entire Affinity thing is all based on Mirrodin. It printed like equipment for the first time. It was one of the first sets in a while where a card had been banned. I think before the set even came out, Skullclamp was banned. Within a week or something like that.
Yeah.
So they just, so many cards got banned from Mirrodin over the course of its life. So they, by the time they made it to Kamigawa, they were understandably very gun shy. That, and the fact that all the rare creatures in the Kamigawa block are legendary, just because of the way nature of the legendary rule.
Mm-hmm.
Weakens the set overall.
Sure. And yeah, so Mercadian Mask kind of feels the same way after Urza's Block, but what's kind of funny is that it does have a lot of good cards and powerful cards.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess in
comparison to Urza's Block, it's no contest. Yeah.
But we are still going to have quite a few cards to talk about here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're just going to take a mini break, and then we'll be back talking about mechanics and legendaries, and then moving on to the actual retrospective.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, in a bit. All right, Internet, welcome back. We are here to do our retrospective of Mercadian Masks. So as usual, we're going to start off with new mechanics and the legendaries, and then we'll move on to the actual cards. So Mercadian Masks is interesting in that it didn't actually introduce any new mechanics, technically speaking.
Like, no new keywords.
Yeah, yeah. What it did have were the mechanics with the Rebels and the Mercenaries.
Yeah.
Where they're all creatures, and you can pay X and 2 to your library for a Mercenary with converted mana cost X or less and put it onto the battlefield. And X is generally one less than the card's converted mana cost. So if you have... we actually have an example up here. So if you look at Kateran Brute, it's black and two generic for a 2/2 horror mercenary. So three converted mana cost, and then its ability is pay two generic, tap it, search your library for a mercenary card with converted mana cost two or less, and put it onto the battlefield.
I don't know if I'd call him a brute at 2/2. That seems to be giving him a lot of, a lot of credit he doesn't deserve.
Like, brute-ish?
Yeah, like, brute-like training.
Yeah.
Like not quite full brute level, maybe just a brew.
Yeah. So there are a lot of cards in this set that do have this kind of mercenary mechanic.
Or rebel.
And I know a detraction from the set, because people were saying that there weren't any new mechanics in that. And I think it was actually Mark Rosewater had said that, like, oh, well, what are you talking about? Like, you look at this mercenary mechanic, that is a new mechanic. It just didn't have a keyword for it. And they were saying that if the set were to be printed again today, that would have, like, it would be called Recruit or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
And it would do the same effect. So it is kind of a mechanic that just doesn't have the actual word on it.
Yeah, and it's also hampered by the fact that the list of good mercenary and or rebel cards is incredibly short.
Yeah.
To the point that there's a card we actually chose not to talk about later, which is a one mana black tutor for a mercenary, and the reason we didn't talk about it is because that card doesn't matter, because there's no decent mercenary. No.
Yeah, if you go five color even, like, just aren't, like, you could get some decent ones, but most of them, like, for commander, their power level is just not there. I mean, I guess you could put in the spell, or the shapeshifters, or changelings.
Yeah, I mean, if you really want one mana tutor for a shapeling, or a changeling.
For a mirror entity, and that's
I really want my mirror entity, I really want my, what's the green one again? The changeling behemoth or something like that? The pro black, you can increase its power. Colossus, I think it is. Colossus.
Yep. So it's sort of, it's a tribe that, you know, some people want to build tribal decks that aren't, you know, goblins or dragons or anything like that. So if you really want, like, there are cards there and you can tutor them, which is good. I just think the power level, I wouldn't say don't expect to win with that deck. The power level is not quite there.
No.
So the other not mechanic, but kind of mechanic, is the spell shapers in this set. And they all have they're all creatures, and they all have an activated ability that requires you to discard one or more cards to get their effect. So for an example, we have Balloon Peddler here. It's one blue, two generic for 2/2 human spell shaper. You can pay a blue, tap it, discard a card, and give a creature flying until end of turn. Now that's a pretty low impact ability. I would not want to discard a card for that. But as we'll talk about in the set, there are actually some pretty good spell shapers that have pretty powerful effects.
And the idea of a spell shaper is just that it turns a card. All of these abilities they do are actually spells. All of these are cards that have been printed. So there is a one blue cost spell that just gives a creature flying until end of turn, and this is meant to be a copy of that. And they've done it, they've printed them not in this set, but not just in this set, I should say, in lots of sets, and they do everything from, you know, Rampant Growth, Mind Twist, Fireball. So there are some really, really good spell shapers that have been printed. We'll talk about the particular ones in the set. But the idea is that you turn scrap cards in your hand into a spell you need at the time.
Yeah, like how often do we have just a bunch of lands in our hand with nothing to do?
Yeah, exactly.
It's sort of neat, now that you mentioned the fact that they're all actual spells, it's kind of like the early version of the Magus cycle, Magus of the Wheel, Magus of the Will, that sort of stuff. They're kind of similar to that in a way.
Very similar. I would argue that the Maguses are meant to be particularly strong cards, so that's why they have to die to work them. They're meant to be like creature reprints of very, very strong cards. So the intention is that you can't use them more than once in the same way you would with a spell shaper.
Yeah. So that is it for the mechanics, or pseudo-mechanics anyway, from the set. So we'll move on to the legendaries there. Now, there are actually only two from this set.
Mm-hmm.
The first one up is Cho Mano. No? Is that not how you pronounce it?
No, that's how you pronounce it. I'm just trying to think of the deck you would try and build with this guy. Please keep going.
So Cho Mano, Revolutionary. It's white, white, and two generic for a 2/2 human rebel, which reads, prevent all damage that would be dealt to Cho Mano, Revolutionary.
Yep.
Yeah, it's sort of underpowered, I guess. Like,
very underpowered.
There are certainly some cards that you could play that could abuse this ability, and it's sort of neat because this is the first time that we have ever seen these words printed on this on a creature card. Anyway, there are other cards that prevent damage to it from all creatures and stuff like that, but this one prevents it from everything. So there are some cards that you could put on. Like, there is an enchantment that says if you would take damage, deals damage to enchanted creature instead. Mm-hmm. There's an equipment that does the same thing. So you can do stuff like that. But I just feel like then you're just playing like a generic white deck where you try not to die, I guess.
Yeah. Cho Mano is not a good general. Don't play him. No. He's, I mean, if you're the one badass with, your unstoppable Cho Mano Revolutionary deck, I'd love to hear how you make that thing work.
And like, I guess you could try to go Voltron again, but even in mono white, there's so many
four mana for a 2/2 for Voltron.
Friends of Vantage. Yeah. Yeah. Oof. Unfortunately, just not quite there.
No.
But it is a rebel, so if you want to go search it out with your recruit mechanic.
Yeah,
from
there
the
you go.
Mechanic,
getting that rebel value in.
So the next and last legendary is more interesting.
Significantly better.
Yep. So we have Squee, Goblin, and Nabob.
Squee!
So it's a red and two generic for a 1/1 Goblin, which reads, at the beginning of your upkeep, you may return Squee, Goblin, Nabob from your graveyard to your hand.
Yeah, so just saying that if you're playing Squee, you're not allowed to play with this art, you have to play with the 10th edition forward art, which is Squee cuddling the Mirari.
I mean, it's good art, yeah. I do like the old one just because it is super weird and different. So how do you like Squee as a commander or in the 99?
Squee is one of my favorite creatures ever printed.
He's definitely, he represents that whole goblins don't die, they never go away, there's always more goblins.
Well, do you know the story with Squee? Why he's like that?
Not entirely. I know he was in that whole Weatherlight saga when I was playing as a kid, but I didn't follow the story enough.
So Squee being an immortal is actually a thing in the story.
Okay.
Squee's like, you know, like Captain Jack Harkness from Torchwood? Squee's like that. Huh. So Squee is, and I might be misquoting the story a little bit here, but my understanding is that Squee was, I don't remember if Urtai did it to him or not, but Urtai got corrupted by Phyrexia.
Sure.
Urtai like opened a portal and then closed the portal with him stuck on the other side, and he was captured and corrupted by the Phyrexians. And then he gets a hold of Squee, and I can't remember if Squee was already immortal beforehand, or if it was Urtai's experiments that made him immortal, but the thing was that Squee was Urtai's prisoner, and Urtai would just kill him. Every day, over and over and over and over and over, in countless horrific ways.
Sounds like a really bad time.
Yeah, and that's like why Squee has this ability, is that he just does not stay down. And then the flavor text on at least this printing of Squee, the like going forward Squee from Modern Masters, and I think 10th edition, is amazing. It's stark, and he's like, some goblins are expendable, some are impossible to get rid of, but he's both at the same time. And
that's incredible.
Just from a card design standpoint, he's like kind of the Red Phoenix thing where they keep like,
yep.
Red has a sub theme of being able to, regenerate or recover the creature, not to the extent that Black does, but there are red cards with regenerate and there are red phoenixes that come back from the graveyard and stuff.
Yep.
And so Squee is a very unique card to build around. There's not really any that come back to your hand as easily as he does, yep. Except maybe like Endless Cockroaches, but which isn't a legend.
And it's a black card. Like black if you want to play red, yeah, this is kind of the best that you have in this.
Yeah, and he's also, it's the fact that he's in a, like he's more than just the sum of his parts. He can keep coming back from the graveyard. He's relatively recastable body, and he's in a relevant tribe. He's a goblin.
Yeah. So it definitely feeds into a lot of those goblins, like sacrifice a goblin to do X, Y, and Z. There's a card called Arms Dealer in the set, which requires you to sacrifice a goblin.
And deal 4 damage,
And then, I mean, pretty obviously works well with a lot of those, like, Faithless Looting, Cathartic Reunion, Wild Guess, all that kind of red card draw. Because you basically get it for free. You discard Squee if he's in your hand, and then comes back.
You get to play the Unkillable Goblin.
Yeah.
You're fighting with the Unkillable Goblin deck, and there's a certain amount of charm to that. Just a 1-1 that, just the underdog who won't stop, the 1-1 who never goes away.
But also needs stuff at his back, because like 3-mana 1-1, even if it does keep coming back, that's not going to win you a game. But he definitely feeds a lot of what Red wants to do anyway. And it should be said that in this set with all those spell shapers that we were talking about, Squee works incredibly
very good with those
as spell you'll see shapers. In Eric and my decks when we get to the end. That's it for the legendaries and the mechanics and everything like that. So I guess we're just ready to just jump right into the set. Eric and I were actually pretty surprised at how many cards are good in the set that we want to talk about. We kind of came into this thinking it would be a bit shorter, but from the looks of our list, not quite.
Well, some of these cards are just throwaway lines, and some of them we actually want to talk about. The first one that we're, and unfortunately just because of the way the tabs open, we are not going to be doing this in alphabetical order like we like to, but the first one we're going to talk about is Charisma, and this is actually a legitimately quite frightening card.
Yeah, so it's blue for an enchantment aura. An enchant creature. So whenever an enchanted creature deals damage to a creature, gain control of the other creature for as long as Charisma remains on the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
So anything with any kind of tweakers, like anything that can tap to deal damage, it's really great with. I've seen it used the most in Tibor and Lumia.
Yeah.
Because they deal 1 damage to each other creature on the battlefield, so then you just gain control of everything.
Did you call them tweakers?
Is that not
pingers?
Pingers.
Tweakers are people who do drugs. Pingers are magic cards that deal single points of damage at a time.
So this is how I have always called them tweakers.
Tweakers, really?
Pingers probably makes more sense.
Pingers makes a lot more sense.
All right, well. the things you learn when you record a podcast.
Yeah. All right. So, you and your meth addicts creatures can be over there. But yeah, no, Charisma is a really good way to take control of a bunch of creatures and kind of get the old school Olivia Valderan effect where you're controlling them until the creature dies.
It's a very blue thing. Yeah. You're taking creatures.
It's good on Niv-Mizzet. It's good on Nin the Pain Artist, stuff like that.
It is still, like, it's a 3-mana aura, and auras are dangerous in our format because they can get 2-for-1 so easily, but this one is very powerful and definitely worth playing if you want to do that, if you want to go that route of taking everyone's stuff.
Yep.
So the next one up is another blue card. We have Coastal Piracy. It is blue-blue and 2 generic for an enchantment, which reads, whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to an opponent, you may draw a card.
So my first exposure to this was in an Edric deck.
Just card draw for days.
Yeah.
It's good. It's, you know, card draw.
If you're playing Tiny Evasive Blue, and blue multicolor, like if Tiny Evasive with blue in it, Coastal Piracy can be a very brutal card. It's really good in Edric. It's really good in that, and I always forget the name of him, but the blue Drake dude, the Countess
Talrand.
Talrand, yeah. Talrand goes nuts with Coastal Piracy.
It can work well with the Cassetto, Richie Archmage.
Absolutely.
Then you can play Snake Travel. You don't have to worry about playing Edric, and you can play this as well.
Thassa.
Yep.
Like, tons of really, really good cards. It's just a really, really good card.
Yeah.
And it's kind of part of a semi-cycle, where there's a couple more cards that do a couple more enchantments that cost about the same and do a very variation of that effect.
Whenever a creature you control deals damage to an opponent, do X, Y, or Z.
Yeah, exactly.
So the next card up we have is Collective Unconscious. It is green, green, and 4 generic for a sorcery, which simply reads, draw a card for each creature you control.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, if you're playing Elf Ball, if you're playing Sapling Tokens.
Yeah, this is a card that gets played in those decks.
Yeah, if you go wide. You know, this was back in the day where green didn't have a whole lot of card draw.
Yes.
So this was very, very powerful. I think it's still good. It might be outclassed a little bit.
Yeah, just because you can get the same effect on a creature now, I think. I think Primordial Sage might be the name of the creature that does it.
Even Shamanistic Revelation is a 5-mana
version of the
version. Does the same thing and it gains you life.
Yeah.
But I still think this is good and I would absolutely still play this in the deck.
Yeah,
like,
and
if you want multiple of the same effect.
Yeah, and this is definitely like where the DNA of that kind of effect started. So it's notable for that.
So the next card up we have is Conspiracy.
Oof.
It is a black and 3 generic for an enchantment, which reads, as Conspiracy enters the battlefield, choose a creature type. Creature cards that you own that aren't on the battlefield, creature spells you control, and creatures you control are the chosen type. So it turns everything in your deck, hand, battlefield, everything, to whatever creature type you want.
Mm-hmm.
Eric was making fun of me as we were talking about this card before we were recording, because I was saying I played this card back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did, I had a Sliver deck.
Oh, God.
And I played this in it because I'm like, oh, I can just choose Slivers, and then I can play a bunch of non-Slivers in my Sliver deck as well. That's so broken.
Yeah.
It was not a good Magic player back in my day.
That's how you make Slivers good, is by playing not Slivers with them.
Yeah, let's go. So why don't you tell us what the actual use of this card is?
Well, the actual use of this card is that there are some cards that tutor for like-type creatures, and that's what you use it for. I remember there was one general that was really broken with Conspiracy, and if I'm being honest, I can't remember what it was off the top of my head now. Oh, it might be Scion. Scion of the Ur-Dragon. This is a really good way to put some backup stuff into Scion of the Ur-Dragon, so you can call out, like, whatever creature you need in your deck, not just necessarily winning combo pieces. And then Scion is not the only general that works that way. There's other ones that do something similar.
It kind of works with that legendary we were talking about in the last episode from Cold Snap, that mono black guy who you can only claim from your graveyard.
And then you
can play knight cards.
Yes, absolutely.
So
absolutely.
If you want to do that, hey, we found another reason to play that mono black guy that you can't really play.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, no, it's really good in a bunch of decks that care about creature type. And then there's a couple more cards that care about creature type that combo really, really well with Conspiracy. But it's like, you gotta be way into the tribal thing. And unless you're goblins specifically, I'm not really that much of a tribal player. So you'd probably have to talk to someone else.
All right. So the next card we have up is Counterspell.
Just pointing out, the Counterspell got a reprint. It's still...
Yep, still blue-blue, instant counter-target spell. It's been printed a bunch.
One of the most efficient Counterspells ever.
And honestly, I don't see people play this enough in EDH. Like, just straight Counterspell. People play all kinds of Counterspells. They play Cryptic Command, Mystic Confluence, that sort of thing. But I think more people need to play just straight up Counterspell.
It's like, a really good
two
card.
Two mana is a lot. It's a staple for blue, and
yeah,
that is so cheap, I think is definitely worth playing. And the art looks super cool from the set. Counterspell has had a lot of bad art, and this is one of the good ones.
For sure.
So the next one we have up is Cowardice. It's blue-blue, three generic for an enchantment, which reads, whenever a creature becomes the target of a spell or ability, return that creature to its owner's hand. That's real gross.
Yep.
Another card you can put into your pinger deck.
Yeah, absolutely. And just bounce everything. Blue actually got a lot of really good cards in this set. Blue has a high...
I mean, it's one of the weakest colors in EDH and Magic in general, so it can probably use some good...
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem, is that, like, blue... they were probably, like, pity pumping blue's power, just because, you know... Especially after Urza's, when they printed stuff like Palancron and Gilded Drake, they, like, the power level was so low that they really needed to boost it.
I mean, red got Shivan Reef.
Or Shivan Gorge, so right? I mean, in comparison to Tolarian Academy, and they just, like, it's night and day.
So I get it. Yeah.
We're
joking 100%. But yeah, this card is very, very gross. I mean, just looking at it, you can think of however many ways you want to abuse this.
Yeah.
It does affect your creatures as well, so you do have to be a bit
not
careful.
Usually a downside, though. Yeah. This is used a lot, this is used a lot in bouncy decks that like to bounce their own stuff. Animar is one of the big ones I can think of. There's a couple others that really, really like to bounce their own crap make a lot of use of this type of effect, not necessarily Cowardice itself. But if you do care about that their bounce value, play Cowardice.
Yep. Very good.
Really, really nasty with, what's the cauldron that gives persist?
Cauldron of Souls?
Yeah.
Or something like that?
Something like that, yeah. There's a cauldron that gives persist, but it's tap, any number of target creatures get persist, it's just tap, bounce the board.
Yeah. The next card up is Crackdown. It is white and two generic for an enchantment, which reads, non-white creatures with power 3 or greater don't untap during their controller's untap steps.
Ugh.
This card's gross. You're saying people use it in...
Xur. Competitive Xur decks like to run this a lot. It's brutal.
I mean, it's another one of those lockdown cards. Like, I'm kind of bored by this kind of stuff just because I've seen so many of them. It's kind of like Meekstone in a way and stuff like that. Like, they're super good. That's not the Magic I want to play or play against necessarily. But if you want to play that kind of lockdown strategy, this is a very powerful card. And for 3 mana, that is dirt cheap.
It's a lot of value for 3 mana in a color that cares about and is able to make a lot of use out of their enchantments.
I mean, even if you're not playing in Xur, if you play it in just a mono white deck, that seems okay too.
Absolutely.
Like just locking your opponent's big stuff out of the game.
Especially since mono white is not a color that gets played a lot. And even like white on its own is one of the lower played colors in EDH.
I actually really like mono white.
I wish I liked mono white. I kind of feel the same way about mono black and mono white. It's like, it's a color that combination that I feel like I should like, but I just, like, it's hard to get it running properly. I did pick up that new dwarf though. So if I am to try and make a mono white deck with him, like, he might be the one who sells me on it.
We'll get there. We'll review that set and talk about it when it's in the past. So the next card up we have is Cornered Market. It is one white and two generic for an enchantment, which reads, players can't cast spells with the same name as a non-token permanent, and players can't play non-basic lands with the same name as a non-token permanent. So it stops players. So say you have a command tower out, or you have a rogue's passage, or some of these non-basic lands. It does stop your opponents from playing those things.
Yep.
But the main reason we wanted to talk about that is the first part of this thing, which reads that players can't cast spells with the same name as a non-token permanent. And this combos with Spy Kit, which is an equipment that was printed in Conspiracy Take the Crown, which is, it's a 2-mana equipment, equips for 2, and reads, equipped creature gets +1/+1, and has all names of non-legendary creature cards in addition to its name. So what this does is that it stops your opponents
casting creatures,
or stops anyone really from playing any creatures that aren't legendary.
That aren't their general. Yeah.
Now Spy Kit combos with a whole lot of other stuff. You know, you can do Sever the Bloodline and that sort of thing too. But this is just another one of those cards that combos with this.
If you're a fan of Spy Kit shenanigans, this is a way you can play with around with that.
Which I know I said I don't like these lockdown kind of decks,
but you like Spy Kit.
Yeah. If it centers around Spy Kit and I can do some janky stuff with it, like, yeah, let's go. Let's do that.
All right. I see how it is.
The next card is a credit voucher. It's a 2-mana artifact. It reads, 2 generic, tap, sacrifice credit voucher. Shuffle any number of cards from your hand into your library, then draw that many cards.
Yeah.
That's good. It's like a kind of like a one-sided windfall, kind of.
Yeah.
But without discarding, like you shuffle it all
yeah,
into
some
your
improvised,
library.
Improvised card filtering.
Yeah.
I think it's been largely supplanted by better cards, but I know this card used to be played in quite a few Glissa the Trader decks because you just keep getting it back after and you just use it to... get back artifacts from your graveyard that you didn't really care whether you had them anymore and then credit voucher them back in.
I would even play this in... I don't think it's good in blue because blue has so much easier card draw, but yeah, in something like mono white, maybe mono red or something like that, where if you do get stuck with, you know, 5 lands in hand or something like that and you just want to get rid of them all, this is actually not a bad way to do it.
Not a bad way at all.
Seeing that many new cards is a good effect for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It also, if you have Alhamrit's Archive, this gets really, really gross.
Yeah.
Because then you're drawing
a lot.
Double the amount of cards in your hand.
Yes.
Man, I should put this into my Arjun, the Shifting Flame deck.
You should not be playing an Arjun, the Shifting Flame deck.
It's not
deck.
Good, but super fun. So the next one up is Crumbling at Sanctuary. It's a 5-mana artifact, which reads, if damage would be dealt to a player, that player exiles that many cards from the top of his or her library instead. This is a card Eric and I did not know about.
Yeah, we were scrolling through Mercadian Mass and then we saw it and we're like, uh-huh. And then we reread it and we're like, hang on, is that actually what it says?
Yeah. If you want to mill, this is very good.
Yeah, this is really good with those new Eldrazi that do stuff with your opponent's cards from exile.
Oh, yes, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, like anything like that. This is...
I kind of wish that there were more of those.
Yeah.
Because I've played in a couple decks that do exile my opponent's things, and I just wish that those processes, maybe there were more of them, or they did kind of bigger things. Some of them are okay, but yeah, I kind of wish that there were more. This is also super gross with the new Ulamog.
Yes.
Because you attack with a 10-10, you exile the top 20 cards of their library, and then you hit them for 10.
All I can picture is like playing the new Grenzo or the new Ulamog and just milling a bunch and then playing this, milling a bunch, and then just getting that mad Oblivion Sower value as soon as halfway through the game, you're just like, I will triple my land count.
Yeah. We have a guy in our playgroup who plays Fennex, and I feel like we need to not tell him about this.
Yeah, we need to make sure he never finds out that this card exists.
Still a good card, though. Well, it's
still a
situationally
good card. I'm sure it combos with something.
Yeah. So the next card up is Customs Depot.
Mm-hmm.
It's blue and a generic for an enchantment, which reads whenever you cast a creature spell, you may pay one. If you do, draw a card, then discard a card. So you're paying one to loot every time.
You can pay one to loot, which isn't, on its own, paying one to loot is like, it's a decent effect. The fact that it's on a 2-mana enchantment, this is a mad and expensive way to get some card draw in.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure there are some blue-black decks that would want this sort of effect, because like you are still discarding cards, and blue doesn't have that many ways to get them back, but if you're discarding, you know, creature spells or anything like that, or cards of flashback, then that might be okay.
Just a really good way to filter your deck.
I was actually looking at a Drownu Lich Lord deck the other day, and this card might actually be pretty good. There aren't a whole lot of creatures in the deck, but that deck definitely wants ways to pitch its hand.
That's true.
Yeah. And yeah, two mana. That's a pretty sneaky card. Next card up is a classic, Dark Ritual. It's a 1-black instant, and it just says add black to your mana pool.
Yeah, Dark Ritual got reprinted. That's all. That's all you wanted to mention is that Dark Ritual
is
in this set. Yeah, this is super cool art for Dark Ritual. Of the various arts I've seen, this one might be one of my favorites. It's very kind of that one's kind of meh.
I'm kind of upset because the one that I have is kind of a boring one. It's the one where it shows like the bottom of an altar and like something's hand.
Yeah, you have that one. But yeah, the Dark Ritual arts that I've seen, I'm just like, I'm scrolling through a bunch of the available arts, and I I think the Mercadian Mask one is my favorite. It's super, super cool looking. It's kind of trippy. There's like this cloud of vapor with an eye in it looking down. Like it's...
I know this is an audio format and this is probably not helping you much, but I would say if you can go look it up, it's very cool.
It's worth it.
So the next card up we have is Dawnstrider. It's a green and a generic for a Dryad Spell Shaper, so the first Spell Shaper we've seen, which reads, green and tap it, discard a card, prevent all combat damage that would be dealt this turn. So kind of fog on a body.
I had no idea this card existed.
No.
This card is so good.
Yeah, like I have run Spore Frog before, which is granted a bit different. That one you have to sacrifice it and it fogs.
Mm-hmm.
So if you played in a black deck, you can get it back. But this one, like discarding just random cards that you don't need or cards that you want to get rid of, for fog is very good.
Can you imagine this in like Mimeoplasm where you're chucking cards you want to reanimate or Gitrog where you're chucking lands and instantly replacing them?
And fogging.
Yeah, and fogging. Like this is actually really good. I can't believe I didn't know this card existed.
Yeah, and the past year or maybe 6 months or so, I've been on a crusade to get my playgroup to play more fogs.
Play more
because fogs. I think fogs are actually very underrated in our format. In Commander, it's not uncommon for people to kind of alpha strike, you know, just swing all out, maybe spend some resources, cards and stuff like that to just to take someone out immediately. And being able to just say like, no, and then that person is open to counterattacks or anything like that. I think fogs are very good and we should play more.
I think your experiences have been colored by playing against me.
You do attack a lot.
I do quite a bit of alpha striking.
Yes. And I mean, maybe not necessarily just straight up fog, but like Arachnogenesis or the one that has buyback where you sacrifice a land.
Yeah, that one's super good. Constant Mist.
It's very good. And honestly, I would play Dawnstrider as well. This card is very, very good.
Yeah.
So the next card up we have is Delrake? I will say I don't know how to pronounce this. So it's black and six generic for a 6/6 horror. It has trample and reads, you may sacrifice three black creatures rather than pay its mana cost.
I don't think this card is very good, but you were saying that some people like it.
So it does seem to have a fan base for sure. I was watching some Star City Games Commander versus, and two of the guys there were kind of losing it over this card about how much they liked this card anyway. And I think it actually is pretty good. Like, sacrificing three creatures to get a 6/6 trample is pretty good. I mean, a 6/6 trample is not going to win you games every time, but playing black, you want to sacrifice creatures a lot, especially in the right deck. Like we were saying in an Endrick Star deck, this seems good.
I mean, this card, it's not my speed. It's a little too clunky for me, and the payoff is a 6/6 trampler, which isn't the greatest. I'd much rather play that Scourge of Nel'Toth, the one that you cast in the graveyard for like two black and sack two creatures.
Yeah, that does seem better than this, because then you're getting a 6/6 flying, which is better, quote unquote, than a 6/6 trample.
And it's more recastable because it's always from the graveyard. You do have to do that initial work of getting it in the graveyard, but
Spell Shaper there.
You'll Spell Shaper it with your little Fog Spell Shaper.
So the next card up we have is Desert Twister, another classic here. It's a green and four generic for a sorcery, which reads destroy target permanent.
You too can vindicate for the low, low cost of six mana.
It's high and it is sorcery speed and it's kind of outclassed by Beast Within, I would say.
Very outclassed by Beast Within, I would say.
But it is a classic card.
It is one of the original ways for, it's one of the original ways for green to get some good removal in.
And again, if you want this effect, green doesn't have a lot of it, so I don't think I would laugh at anyone if they played Desert Twister.
Certainly not. If they weren't playing Beast Within and they played Desert Twister, sure, I might be like, you need to reconsider some options, buddy, but...
Then, yeah, you put your hand on their shoulder and like, hey, there's a better way.
I have a whole world to show you.
do we go to Aladdin?
No.
I can show you the world. So our next card is Diplomatic Immunity.
Has just been revoked. Lethal Weapon.
Like, I've never seen the Lethal Weapons, really.
Really?
I mean,
you're missing out. At least for the first one, you're really missing out. Lethal Weapon 1 is really good.
They must have been on, like, Spike TV. Yeah, or, like, a million Super times. Station back in the day. And so I probably would have seen them. But anyway, Diplomatic Immunity. It's blue and a generic for an enchantment or enchant creature. It has Shroud, and it says enchanted creature has Shroud. So if you really want your creature not to die, or to be targeted anyway, this would be the way to do it.
This is also played a lot in Xur.
The more cards we talk about, And the more we're saying, this card's pretty good in Xur, the more I just don't want to play against Xur.
Yeah, it is a, well, you're lucky, not that many people you know play it. But, yeah, this is one of the first cards that goes in a Xur deck, actually. And also, usually, I would say the first card that it fetches.
Yeah, and it does kind of get around that, that risk of playing enchantment, enchant creatures, because it has Shroud and the enchant creature has Shroud.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the only way it's going to go away is through a Wrath or something like that. Which the creature would anyway, so like, yeah.
The only card I've ever seen get pulled out by Xur first more, probably Necropotence.
Oh, which makes sense.
Yeah, because people just want to get their card drawn so they could keep playing Xur if he gets killed. Yeah, no, this gets pulled out a lot.
Plus, and Xur, you just get to say, diplomatic immunity!
Yeah, but the other thing about him is that the way Xur's ability is phrased and done, it means that you can... When he pulls out an aura from his deck, it gets around the Shroud. So you can still attach auras to him when he attacks, despite the fact that he's wearing diplomatic immunity.
Huh. Okay. That's a neat interaction.
Yes.
So the next one up is, we have a card called Distorting Lens. It's a 2-mana artifact which simply reads, tap, target permanent becomes the color of your choice until end of turn.
Simple and very, very effective. One of the only cards that does this kind of effect. It only costs 2.
I mean, there are a lot of blue cards.
That change color,
But that's fair. This is an artifact you can put in any deck. Mm. It works the best, I would say, or it works very well in Jaya Ballard.
It's a hallmark of the Jaya Ballard deck.
Because her first ability lets her tap to destroy target blue permanent.
Oh, girl after my own heart.
And then, you know, you can change whatever you want to blue, and then Jaya Ballard becomes super good removal.
Just good in any deck that cares about colors. It can be used, it's only one target at a time, but it can be used a lot to get extra value out of color hosers, essentially. The other thing that it gets a lot of extra value out of is any general that has protection.
Oh, true. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Like Animar and stuff like that.
Exactly.
So the next one up, we have Dust Bowl. It's a land, which you can tap for a generic, or you can tap 3 generic and tap Dust Bowl. Sacrifice a land to destroy target non-basic land. So you are paying 4 and a land to use this ability because Dust Bowl itself has to tap. But
repeatable wasteland.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's really, really, really
good. This card's also quite expensive, if I remember correctly, because the only time it got reprinted was as one of the expeditions.
Oh, that makes sense. Right. When we were looking at them, I was saying I'm surprised I haven't seen more of this card again.
But no, it's rare, it's hard to find, and it's not cheap. Because a lot of decks really want to play it. There's obviously the more recent bout of lands matter decks care about it. Stuff like Titania, stuff like Gitrog.
This gets so gross in those decks.
Yeah, but back in the day, this got played a lot in an Azusa land destruction deck that my friend used to play.
Because you just ramp out harder than that.
Exactly, and then you can just ping apart their lands. It's just super, super good utility. You can sack any land and you can turn any land essentially into a wasteland, including one of the ones you tapped for the mana to
which is the smart way to do it.
Yeah, Dust Bowl.
Are there any land? I mean, I guess there are lands that you control that you care about being in the graveyard. If you have like Drakmor Salvage,
Drakmor Salvage is a big one. Another one that just got printed is that. Moonlight Temple?
Drowned Yard Temple.
Yeah.
The one where you can
pay 3 and put it back onto the battlefield. So that's like, it's 7 mana. So it is, I've got nothing else to do with my mana stuff, but
I mean, it doesn't have to be the same turn too. You can use this one turn, you know, maybe the next turn get this back and then start blowing.
And
more
if
lands.
Your opponents care about you blowing up one land at a time, they tend to really care about you blowing up one land at a time. So it's a good way to color hose people.
And I think it is a bit more fair that you can only target non-basics.
As opposed to Strip-Mine.
Yeah. Because then it would just be broken and people could just do some really, really gross things with that. So the next one up is Embargo. It is blue and 3 generic for an enchantment, which reads non-land permanents don't untap during their controller's untap steps. Gross. And then at the beginning of your upkeep, you lose 2 life. So that is not a cumulative upkeep like from Cold Snap Rising.
No.
That is just every turn you lose 2 life.
Never
which
increases.
Is the... of such a small price to pay for this super good lockout effect. Now granted, they still get their land so they can still play stuff.
Yes.
But anything on the field is not going to be untapping. And especially if you put this in like an Aloro deck or something like
where you're just never effectively paying life for it. Yeah. It's insane.
Yeah.
It's very, very good. It's also very good in Dreevy.
Okay.
Because sure. you untap your own stuff using Dreevy's ability.
It's sad really how many, like, Dreevy by nature wants to do these really hard lockout sort of things just because it can untap so many things.
Yeah. Which isn't our style of playing, but, like, some people really like that. So it's important that they get their hateful lockdown generals, even if we don't like it.
And this isn't as good as Stasis, which is, like, the sort of the go-to lockout card.
The only reason almost is just because it's more expensive. It's 4 instead of 2. Sure. Which means you cannot get this with Xur. Hey.
Yay. So the next card up we have is Energy Flux. It is
fetchable with Xur.
Fetchable with Xur. Blue, 2 generic for an enchantment, which reads, all artifacts have, at the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice this artifact unless you pay 2. So it just hoses everyone's mana rocks. If you're playing against, you know, a Jiretti or any kind of artifact general, Brea.
Voltron generals, this is super effective against as well.
Yep. It really makes them consider if they want, if the artifact is worth keeping around or not. And if you can make people make that decision, then I think you're doing pretty well.
It's really good artifact hate in blue.
Which, I mean, blue does tend to play a lot of artifacts, but it doesn't always necessarily.
Especially if you plan it that way. Yeah, if you're like thinking about it and you've got that at the forefront of your head while you're building, then it's very easy to build around that.
Actually, speaking of my Surak Dragonclaw deck, I play, you know, Sol Ring and a couple mana rocks, but I don't play a lot, so that's a blue deck that could benefit from something like that.
Yeah, I would argue that because Surak is green as well, you do have better options for artifact hate.
Okay.
It's also green and red. Like, both really good artifact hating colors.
I guess if I want to go to artifact destruction, blue would not be the color.
But this is a really good, kind of like that, the one Phyrexian Gate, I think. The one black artifact hate card that lets you, like, sack a creature.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about? Yeah. That, like, in something like Dimir, this is another really good option for artifact hate. It's really good for the colors that don't usually get that. So in mono blue, Energy Flux is really good.
So the next card up we have is Extortion. It is black and 3 generic for a sorcery, which reads, look at target player's hand and choose up to 2 cards from it. That player discards those cards.
It's just an expensive discard a specific card spell.
I mean, it can be good. There are definitely decks that want to drain as many resources from your opponent as possible. Stuff like Erebos, stuff like Nath of the Gildeath, this becomes pretty good in. And the fact that you do get to choose which of the cards they're discarding is good. It can sort of help you a bit against combo.
Yeah.
I don't think it's not as good as like Hymn to Turak or something like that, which is 2 mana and they discard 2 cards at random.
Yeah, no, not even close. It's not even as good as like something like Thoughtseize just blows out of the water. It's a really good illustration in power level change though, because if you remember the card Monomania, do you know what Monomania does?
I do not.
Monomania, if I remember correctly, I think that's the name of the card. It's 5 mana and target opponent discards all cards in their hand except for 1. And it's the same cost, 5 mana.
Yeah.
While we're here, we'll just double check, make sure I'm not talking out of my butt on that. But I'm pretty sure. Yeah, it's 5 mana, target player chooses a card in his or her hand and discards the rest.
Yeah, so don't play...
Don't play Extortion, play Monomania, but it's just a good illustration of how power levels have changed.
Yep. So the next card up is actually part of a cycle, but we're just going to talk about one because they're all the same.
Yes.
We have Eye of Ramos. It's a 3 mana artifact, which this one taps for a blue, or you can sacrifice it and add a blue to your mana pool. Now that second ability you don't have to tap, so if you want, on a turn you can get 2 colored mana.
Yeah, to the Sol Ring for 2 mana.
Yeah, and there is one of these for each color.
Yes, there's a Heart of Ramos, there's a vanilla.
So I was saying,
one for every color.
I don't super like 3 mana rocks that can only tap for 1 color. But I suppose if you're playing monocolor decks, that's not so bad, because I don't mind 3 mana rocks that can tap for any color, like Darksteel Ingot and stuff like that I'll play. But I guess the fact that you can, on a turn, get 2 mana out of it is pretty good. And maybe the red one is better than the others, because nowadays red does get a lot of ability to bring artifacts from the graveyard back into play.
It's good with specific kinds of decks. There's a couple situations where it's very good. It's also 3 mana for a mana rock that you can, in a pinch, get 2 mana out of, which is not
not bad at all. You sack it at will, which is also good. It's played in, like you said, red. I've seen the black and green ones played in Glissa again, the okay. Glissa the Trader deck. The blue one gets played quite a bit in some decks that can do funny stuff with artifacts. The other one I've seen get played quite a bit is the white one, because the white one
needs it.
Well, white needs it in terms of the ramp, but white also has a lot of cards like World Queller. Or Martyr's Bond, where when you lose a black gets the effect where you lose a creature.
Okay.
And everyone loses a creature. White has a lot of cards that expand that effect to cover any permanent. And so this is a good way to sack an artifact and instantly make your opponent have to sack artifact of their own.
Sure, yeah, that seems good. I would say, I don't know, I can't help but compare this to Commander Sphere.
Commander Sphere is better, definitely.
Because then you're not getting a second mana out of it, but you do need to draw a card, which
is
most of the time more powerful.
Mana?
It's three.
Three?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. But, you know.
They're pretty close.
Yeah, the Ramos artifacts are not bad. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to another not bad card.
Ah, not terrible.
This is a card called Food Chain.
Yes.
It is a green and two generic for an enchantment, which reads, exile a creature you control, add X mana of any one color to your mana pool, where X is the exiled creature's converted mana cost plus one. Spend this mana only to cast creature spells. So I think this is most notoriously used in Prosh.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yes, you do. You've done it to me.
So it's
the whole thing that you, when you exile a creature, you get that much mana plus one. So with Prosh, you exile the tokens, which have a converted mana cost of zero,
mm-hmm.
and you still get one mana out of them.
Yep. And you always are going to be getting more tokens every time you recast Prosh because it scales with its casting cost.
Yeah, Prosh creates tokens equal to the mana spent to cast it.
Exactly. So what you do is it's a chain reaction where you make infinite mana to cast creatures, infinite kobolds, and then you recast Prosh. And it almost certainly wins the game, always on that turn.
Yeah, because you're getting...
when I did it.
You're getting infinite mana.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting infinite sacrifice, or leaves the battlefield effect. Oh no, I guess not leaves the battlefield
effect. No, but you do get infinite sac triggers too, because you recast Prosh and you have infinite tokens.
Sure.
So you can get infinite death triggers, infinite
mana,
infinite enter the battlefield triggers, infinite 0/1 tokens, and infinite mana that you can use to spend or cast creatures.
Sure. So let's say outside of that kind of broken way to use this card, mm-hmm. are there other decks that
absolutely
can make use of this?
All the time. This deck, or this card gets seen, it was kind of rediscovered, I'd say, because of Prosh, but it sees play in a lot of other decks for that same reason. It's a really good way to get rid of creatures that you don't necessarily care about in order to ramp into a big creature. Consider that you can play... On, like, turn 3, you play Food Chain. On turn 4, you play Solemn Simulacrum.
Mm.
So you've just ramped, you're at 5 mana. You untap, you are now at 6 mana if you hit a land drop.
And then you
exile
and you're
Solemn.
At 11
you're mana. At 11 mana, you can now cast the Eldrazi Titans.
That seems okay.
On turn 5.
Yeah, that's
so,
okay.
Like, it's those kinds of plays that make this so good. It's also really, really good in any kind of ramping deck that wants its general to die. Because it can use its general to ramp more. Something like...
This could also be really good in a Krufix deck.
Mm-hmm.
Because then your mana doesn't empty from your pools and you can just generate.
You do have to keep track of that mana because you still can only use it to cast creatures.
Right.
But Krufix or Omnath.
Yep.
Just horrendous with this card. Yeah, both of those really, really like this. Titania is another really, really nasty one, because when you cast Titania, you are theoretically getting a fetch land or something back,
sure.
Right? Then you exile Titania, make 6 mana, break your fetch land you just got, and you just recasted Titania, and you've got another land trigger, which is going to get you another token. So on the first cast of Titania, you have made 15 power in dudes.
That seems good.
Yeah, it's really... And hop yourself a bunch of mana ahead for the next turn.
I know we're kind of spending a lot of time on this card, but it is sort of one of the most important cards from this set.
It's one of the most powerful cards from this set. Yeah. I would argue that there's one card we're going to see more powerful, but this is probably the second most powerful card from this set.
And pretty hard to get a hold of and probably quite expensive. It was
really?
Only printed in Mercadian Masks, and that is it.
Probably. I mean, it's harder to get a hold of, I know that. But now it is... Oh, dear God!
Yeah, so Food Chain, we just checked in, Food Chain is an $18 card.
It's a $20 card for the mint condition one, slightly played, that goes down in value, but yeah, it's a $20 card. Foil is 70.
That's a lot, so.
People who want to play Food Chain really want to play Food Chain.
So the next card up we have is Forced March. It is black, 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 and X for a sorcery, which reads, destroy all creatures with converted mana cost X or less.
Yeah.
That's good. I mean,
it's a good way to wipe out weenies.
Yep. It's another kind of wrath effect, which black does have some good wrath effects, but a lot of them do require, you know, X in their casting cost, whether it be, you know, Killing Wave or, Black Sun Zenith and that sort of thing.
The nastiest one is Death Cloud, but that's more of a tax thing.
Yes. So this is actually pretty good. And if you do have bigger creatures, then you can wipe out a bunch of weenies and keep just your bigger creatures alive. Or if somehow you have Indestructible, this would actually be pretty good in Yhini.
Yhini.
Right? Because you can sacrifice one of yours, make him indestructible, or make it indestructible.
Yeah.
And then destroy everyone else's stuff. It is a little pricey.
It gets a little expensive, I will say. But it's still quite good.
Yeah. And black does have a lot of ways to generate an obscene amount of mana.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's pretty good. I would probably play this in my, Kozvet deck.
Kozvet, yeah.
And draw a bunch of cards and lose a whole bunch of
life. And then get real close to dying, yep.
Yeah. But that's what the deck does. So the next card up we have is Foster. It is a green, green, and two generic for an enchantment, which reads, whenever a creature you control dies, you may pay one generic. If you do, reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a creature card. Put that card into your hand and the rest into your graveyard.
Yeah, kind of a proto-evolutionary leap.
Yeah, a little bit. It's good because it only costs a generic, whereas evolutionary leap does cost a green to activate.
And requires you to sacrifice instead of just triggering when it dies.
It's true. I was actually, again, for my Serac deck, I was looking at evolutionary leap, but in three-color deck, requiring green seemed a bit pricey. So I might actually look into something like this. The only thing is that you're going to need either need a high density of creatures, or not care about cards going to your graveyard so much because of that. Because
Evolutionary Leap puts them on the bottom of your library, whereas this one dumps them directly into your yard.
But there are some decks that wouldn't mind that so much necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in green, like if you're playing some Golgari something or another, or maybe some Sultai stuff that wants stuff in their yard anyway. But this does turn all of your creatures dying into more fuel. If you're worrying about that. Yeah, especially, absolutely. Again, back in the day when green didn't have a whole lot of card draw and stuff like that. This was a way to make sure that all of your threats turned into, in theory, more threats or more stuff to play. So the next card up is a Fountain Watch. It is white, white, and three generic for a 2/4 human cleric, which reads, artifacts and enchantments you control have shroud.
I don't think that this is definitely not the cheapest version of this effect. I know that there are other creatures that give your artifacts and your enchantment, or your enchantment shroud. I don't know if there's another one that does both, but there's definitely been reprints of this effect for cheaper. But this might be one of the first ones that did it.
Yeah, and it's actually good, like, the fact that it's on a creature obviously makes it a bit more susceptible to removal, but it also means that recursion is a bit easier.
Yeah.
So if you're playing some sort of black-white, like the new Daxos deck that cares about enchantments, and you're playing black, so you have ways of getting stuff back, I think this is actually quite good.
If you played this in the Daxos deck, it would give your Daxos and all your token shroud, too. That'd be pretty good.
Ooh, actually, I don't think Daxos himself
is an enchantment.
I would have to double-check, but I'm pretty sure he's not. I think he's just a zombie. Oh,
okay.
But if you're playing an Enchantress deck or an Artifact deck, in white, this card is actually pretty good. 5 mana is a little pricey, but for that effect, it's very, very, very powerful. So the next card up we have is a General's Regalia. It's a 3 mana artifact, which reads, pay 3 generic. The next time a source of your choice would deal damage to you this turn, that damage is dealt to target creature you control instead. So it kind of combos with the Cho Mano
or Squee. This is actually Squee's outfit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you're looking at the art. For a goblin. Yep, it's his weird robes and stuff.
Yep, it is meant for you to be protected from damage forever by using Squee.
Yep.
And this didn't even make it into the deck I built later.
This could also go pretty well if you're playing the gods as your commander, so long as they're a creature, which is a bit weird.
This would go well if you like Stuffy Doll.
Yes, that is super good. Yep. those are the only cards I can really think of. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that there are other indestructible things. You know, if you're playing an indestructible themed deck or something like this would absolutely fit in.
This is kind of cool because there is, like, I think Pariah's Shield, which does a similar thing, but it's an equipment that you actually have to equip. This is an ability that you trigger for 3.
Sure.
So there are pros and cons to both sides of that you want to consider, but this is just a card that is surprisingly good that a lot of people might not know about.
This could also go well with, I can't remember quite the name. It was printed in last year's Commander set. It's a blue card with a blue creature with flash. It's like a 4/1. And whenever it's dealt damage, you draw that many cards.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I know exactly which one you're talking about.
So, you know, if you can flash it in and then pay 3, if somebody's trying to like fireball you out or something like that, it might be okay. I mean, the card does enough on its own, the fact that it has flash, but it can combo a bit with this, draw a bunch more cards.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Why not?
And I mean, even if you're using this as a defensive card where you don't have indestructible creatures or anything like that, even if you have creatures like tokens or something like that and the mana to spare, then like it stops from Voltron.
Yeah, it does. It's a cheap way to protect yourself.
So the next card up we have is Hammer Mage. It is a red and a generic for a 1/1 human spell shaper, which reads, pay red and X, tap it, discard a card, and destroy all artifacts with converted mana cost X or less.
I'd like to think this guy isn't actually a mage. He's just like a dude who owns a really large mallet.
Yeah, he's just fancy.
Watch me work my magic! I'm a wizard!
Yeah, I don't think it's as good. I think it got kind of outclassed a bit by Vandal Blast.
Yes.
Which destroys all artifacts you don't control.
Mm-hmm.
But being able to control what you're destroying with this is pretty good.
It being repeatable is pretty good.
Yeah, and again, you're playing red, which can get stuff back. So not only are you discarding a card, which you can get back, the artifacts that you are destroying, you can, in theory, get back as well. If you have, like, a Goblin Welder or a Duretti or something like that.
In theory.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if I would necessarily play this guy over Vandal Blast, but it's another effect like that.
Yeah.
So the next card up is High Market. It's a land, which can tap for a generic, or you can tap it, sacrifice a creature, and gain 1 life.
This card used to be a lot harder to get a hold of than it is now.
Yeah, they reprinted it in Commander Precons last year, which definitely made it a lot easier. This is good. Like, having a sacrifice outlet on a land is really good.
This one's good because it can go in any deck, too.
Yes.
It's a sac outlet on land that can go in any deck. It's a simple effect, gain 1 life. That's not why you play it. You play it because it's a land that you can tap for mana, doesn't enter the battlefield tapped, and it can fit in any deck, which makes a big difference when someone's trying to mind control your big beater, or you need to sack to get more tokens or counters on Marin or anything of that nature.
Yeah. Or I play this in Gaunti where I want stuff in my graveyard anyway to get back and stuff like that. It's really, really good.
Exactly.
It used to be a little better when the Tuck rule still existed because that was one of the
ways to protect your general, yeah.
But still very good, and I would put it in almost any deck. Like, the price you're paying to put that in a deck is not very high. So the next card up is Honor the Fallen. Is a white and a generic for an instant, which reads, exile all creature cards from all graveyards. You gain 1 life for each card exiled this way.
This is some real good graveyard hate.
Yeah, instant speed, 2 mana is pretty good.
2 mana, instant speed, all creature cards, all graveyards, and you get another benefit. You gain 1 life for, like, this card would be good even if you didn't gain the life. But you also gain a ton of life.
I mean, depending.
Usually, when you'd be casting this, if you're casting this against a, like, there's one reanimator deck. Let's just say it's like later in, or mid game even, and there's one reanimator deck that you're trying to hose out. Just the incidental dead creatures on your side and on the other two players' sides, plus the value you get from the reanimator deck, you're probably gaining close to 10 life, at least.
Not anything to sneeze at.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's going to kind of depend on your meta, how much you really want to play a card like this. But in ours, anyway, we do definitely have a lot of reanimator effects.
Yeah.
So I think, it's quite good. 2 mana is super cheap for that kind of effect. So the next card up we have is Hunted Wumpus. It is a green and 3 generic for a 6/6 beast. So 4 mana for 6/6. That's gotta be good. So when Hunted Wumpus enters the battlefield, each other player may put a creature card from his or her hand onto the battlefield. So, Eric wanted me to bring up this card specifically because I guess there's a story behind this that I don't know about.
Okay, so first of all, back in the day, this was a very competitive card. 4 mana for a 6/6 outweighed the downside because of creature value. But this card is the source of a great, great Magic story. And I've
It's been a while since I've recapped this story, so I may misquote some of it, and I apologize if I'm mistaking the facts. Please let me know. But it's the reason I call it Humpus Wumpus. And it's because back in the day at Magic tournaments, there was a ruling that you had to declare the card you were tutoring for if you were tutoring for a specific kind of card. So if you cast something along the lines of Worldly Tutor, right?
Okay.
Search your library for a creature card, reveal it, put into your hand. On top of your deck.
So you couldn't just look through your deck.
Like nowadays, we will often say at an EDH table, it's like, I'm tutoring for a creature. And then people would be like, what are you tutoring for? And you're just like, I have no idea. Let's see. Back in the day, the rules of Magic were that you couldn't do that. You'd have to be looking for a specific thing. You had to know what was in your deck. So if you accidentally tutored for a card that you'd run out of, then you'd
feel
hosed. You need to know your deck. That ruling got changed in the wake of a finals at a big Magic tournament. I believe it, whatever the equivalent of the Pro Tour was at the time. And it was, I think it might have been actually the equivalent of the Grand Prix. Like, it was the finals of a very important match. And it was a guy who had played a card to, he was playing the deck, the Hunted Wumpus deck. And he played a card to tutor for Hunted Wumpus that would have essentially won him the game.
Okay.
I think, or at least got him into the game. And as he goes to search his library, he says, I'm going to search for Humpus Wumpus. And his opponent looked up and he's just like, judge. And there's no card named Humpus Wumpus.
Nope.
So he failed to find that cost him the game.
I mean, I want to say the other guy is super rude for doing something like that.
I don't remember if like he called judge. Well, it's also like it's the grand stage.
Yeah,
right?
you don't get
to make a mistake like that.
No.
I don't know the exact details. I might be messing it up. I don't know if the opponent said judge. I don't know if the judge just said you can't do that because you said Humpus Wumpus. But like the guy mispronounced it as Humpus Wumpus and it cost him the entire match. Yeah. How bad does that suck?
That stings a lot.
Yep. And so now you know why the tutoring rules are the way they are.
Yeah, and why people call it Humpus Wumpus.
Yeah.
Hey, we're all learning something here, folks. So the next card up we have is Larceny. This is sort of a nasty one.
Mm-hmm.
It is black, 3 generic for an enchantment, which reads, whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, that player discards a card. So kind of like the opposite end of a coastal piracy.
What's the matter? You don't like people making you discard?
I mean, I like having a hand, generally speaking.
Yeah, I mean, you don't get to have hands.
Yeah.
That's why we're buying you hooks for Christmas.
If you're going wide in any way or flyers, anything evasive, this card just becomes
absolutely disgusting.
Yeah.
If you're playing Nath of the Guiltleaf, this card is repulsive.
Sure, because you're making a bunch of tokens.
And then you then use those tokens to beat your opponent's face and make more tokens, all the while depriving them of cards.
Yeah. I want to say that your opponents have to have cards to discard for this card to be good, but let's be real.
Yeah.
We're playing EDH. Nobody's going hellbent unless they really want to.
Yeah, I mean, if your opponents have no cards in their hand, you're probably winning the game. And, yeah, there's usually going to be someone you can hit for this.
So the next one up is Liability. It is a black, and a generic for an enchantment, which reads, whenever a non-token permanent is put into a player's graveyard from the battlefield, that player loses one life.
Mm-hmm.
Again, just kind of all these, like, really rude black cards that are really, really punishing people.
This set was full of really ugly enchantments, like really, really punishing enchantments.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, this is, Liability is a gross card.
Yep. Back in the day, my friend Mike Bennett had a Grixis deck that was completely creatureless.
Uh-huh.
So he would play Lethal Vapors, Liability, all that sort of really just nasty destroying creature stuff. So I know this card well.
I'm surprised he doesn't play it in his Mogus deck. Did he?
Probably did.
We just never saw it.
Yeah, that same guy went on to make a creatureless Mogus deck. So the next one up is Magistrate's Scepter. It is a 3-mana artifact.
You didn't know about this card.
I did not. So it reads, 4 generic, tap it, put a charge counter on Magistrate's Scepter. Or tap it, remove 3 charge counters from Magistrate's Scepter, take an extra turn after this one. Oh, so the amount of ways you can break this card.
So for all of the Hulkclad.
Yep. You just go infinite.
Because you don't sack the Scepter.
No, you do not.
You just take charge counters off it.
How did they think this was a good card to
they
make?
They weren't thinking.
I mean, this card, this set is still old enough that Wizards was, it seeming like, trying to find their feet a little bit.
I mean, every set has mistakes like this. When they printed Doubling Season, they didn't think about the fact that Magister's Scepter would get two counters every time you used it and all that stuff. So it's like, should say Sacrifice or Exile Magistrate sure. Scepter on it. It should say that. It doesn't. So that being said, the list of decks that actually go absolutely infinite with this is relatively low.
Sure, but there are still enough.
There's enough that's annoying.
That abuse it as well. Like even if you're not going infinite necessarily, like this in Atraxa is super, super good. Any kind of proliferate deck at all, this card gets.
Oh man, this in Atraxa. Bleh.
Yeah, yeah. So the next card up is Mercadia's Downfall. It is red and 2 generic for an instant, which reads, each attacking creature gets +1/+0 until end of turn for each non-basic land defending player controls. So it is a combat trick, which is not great in EDH.
It's an Alpha Strike combat trick.
Yeah, this reads more like an overrun than just a combat trick. People in Commander play so many non-basic lands that this card will easily give, I don't know, +6, +7, +8.
Something like that
to each creature you control.
I like my Wilderness Elemental.
And what I really like about this card too is you don't have to necessarily attack.
Yes.
If somebody else is playing a token deck or somebody else is trying to go in on an opponent, you can be like,
a sneaky way to suddenly play Politics at the Table. Yeah, absolutely.
I kind of like this in the same way that I like Tainted Strike, which is a black card that gives an attacking creature +1/+0 and infect until end of turn.
Oh.
So again, even if you're not playing infect and you're not attacking, you can still take somebody out of the game just with a really cheap card.
Absolutely.
Yep, Mercadia's Downfall is good. So the next card up is Misdirection. It is blue and 3 generic for an instant.
No, it's not.
It reads, you may exile a blue card from your hand rather than play Misdirection's mana cost. And it reads, change the target of target spell with a single target.
Mm-hmm.
So this is very similar to from Cold Snap last episode with all those things that let you exile cards from your hand instead of paying their mana cost.
Yeah, exactly.
And the same thing with this card. That is a powerful effect that you can look completely open or all your mana is tapped.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can still do something like this. Now this one, changing the target of a spell with a single target to something else, like it can win games, but generally it's not going to be as powerful as like a Force of Will or something like that that can just get rid of anything.
But it does matter.
Yeah.
It really, really does matter, especially since like some stuff, like I think Blue Sun Zenith is target player Blue Sun Zenith, but Sphinx's Revelation
and
might
Stroke
be.
Of Genius
Stroke
well.
Of Genius definitely is. There's lots of cards that you think of casting on yourself for benefit without realizing that it could be any target player.
Or so, even if it's like removal of some kind, like if somebody goes to pass something or heroes
exactly.
Downfall.
And blowing out their own general. Like if someone's behind on the board and they're trying to remove one of your creatures to get back into the game and you turn around and blow up whatever their threat was, that's backbreaking.
Yeah.
So it can be pretty rough.
And all those cards in general, like it feels real good if, you know, you tap out and you pass the turn and your opponent's like, oh, you're tapped out, and you're like, yes. And then they
that
play
feels
some,
really good to
some
you.
Big something or nothing. You're
you,
like,
you, this is part of the reason you like Fogs. You like doing that a lot. You like being the tricksy little.
I like my opponent thinking they're going to win.
Yeah, and then you just be like, yeah. Snidely Whiplash over here with his underhanded tricks.
So our next card up is Monkey Cage, which is just a great name. So it's a 5-mana artifact, which reads, when a creature enters the battlefield, sacrifice Monkey Cage and create X22 green monkey creature tokens, where X is that creature's converted mana cost.
It's a cage full of monkeys.
It is. It's a barrel of monkeys.
Yeah.
I never understood the point of that.
The barrel of monkeys?
Yeah.
Toy?
Was it fun?
Yes. You never.
Was it supposed to be fun? No, I played with that. I just never really understood it.
I mean, you would create like these long strings of monkeys and then you'd hang them from stuff. Like the entire point was that you'd like hang them from like lampshades and curtain rods around the basement and there'd just be streams of monkeys everywhere.
Yeah, I never did that. I just played with them a bit and then put them back and I'm like, okay. Anyway, so how many monkeys can we realistically create with Monkey Cage? So,
not enough to overcome the lack of joy you had growing up, apparently.
Yeah, I had Transformers. What are you going to do? So this card becomes infinitely better if you can flash it out. If you can get it onto the battlefield at the end of your opponent, to your right's turn, and then you get to control how many monkeys.
I disagree.
Really?
I think this card becomes infinitely better when you can recur it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
for sure.
When you can bring back the monkey cage over and over again.
Yeah.
And then just constantly make your opponent breed monkeys for you.
I just worry about Eric and I played a lot of Hearthstone in the day, and there was a mage spell called Mirror Entity.
Yeah.
Which is a thing that you would play, and then whenever your opponent plays their first creature, you get a copy of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just worried about paying 5 mana for this thing, and then they're like, okay, well, I'll play this mana dork, and then you get a 2/2.
I mean, they have to have the mana dork in their hand to do that.
Sure. Or just something inconsequential.
Like,
I don't know, just like...
Sorry. Like, realistically, I'd say that the way they hose you is with a 3 mana creature. Most people aren't going to have just 2 mana or 1 mana creature.
Sure, we just
don't
play enough.
Yeah, like, so 3 mana is probably where you're gonna see a lot of, you know, Trinket Mage cycle, Wood Elves, that kind of creature. And yeah, they can do that, but then if you can recur it, it doesn't matter. Cause
yeah,
you're just constantly,
true.
And the other thing is that if they're casting 3 or 2 mana creatures, then they're making you guys who trade with those 3 or 2 mana creatures, and you can keep recurring the Monkey Cage.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I just think that, I don't know, in my perfect world, I have a Vedalken Orrery out, I can play this, and then I'll play my 6-drop or whatever, or Eldrazi Titans or something gross like that.
Oh my god, playing this before you play, like, Kozilek?
Yeah.
Just all the monkeys?
Kozilek and all the monkeys.
Kozilek, Herald of Monkeys.
I would play that card. But yeah, Monkey
The
Cage.
Real story behind Planet of the Apes.
That's another one of those cards I did not know existed.
Monkey Cage? Neither did I! It's so cute!
That's great. So our next card, is Natural Affinity. It is green and 2 generic for an instant, which reads all lands become 2/2 creatures until end of turn. They're still lands. So if, I don't know, somebody goes Wrath aboard, you can blow up all the lands. If that's what you want to be. I mean, you can get surprise blockers, I guess, or surprise attackers if you're playing some sort of like heavy ramp like Mina and Den or something like that, or Azusa.
You haven't named the decks this is really good in.
Okay, so what decks is this?
Gitrog and Titania.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah. So you make a bunch of dudes. You can use this with an overrun effect to suddenly win the game, but it's also really good Wrath insurance because your opponents go to Wrath or something like that, and you're like, okay, I'm going to turn all the lands into creatures. All of them are going to die, except I am going to now draw a billion cards or make a billion 5/3s.
Yeah, I think that's a lot better in Titania. Like, you can draw a whole bunch of cards in Gitrog, but if you have no lands to play stuff.
I mean, you're probably going to draw into lands.
It's true, but just the fact that, you make as many 5/3s as you have lands.
Yeah, that seems like you'd win the next turn.
Yeah, because, like, what they tap out.
Yeah, especially since no one else was planning on running out of lands all
that's
of a sudden.
True. Yeah.
And they, if they're wrathing, they probably thought they were going to have an empty board, and it's just like, not so much, buddy.
Yeah, this card's very good.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very, very good. Well, it's situationally good. So our next card up is a Notorious Assassin. Is black and 3 generic for a 2/2 human spell shaper assassin who reads black and 2 generic, tap him, discard a card, destroy target non-black creature, it can't be regenerated. It's kind of a dark banishing.
Yeah, this dude's a sniper with a crossbow.
He looks like he would fit in like an Assassin's Creed.
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that. Having removal on a creature is good. Yeah. The fact that it's non-black is obviously not the best, but there's going to be something on the board that you can destroy with this guy for the cost of a card that you're discarding in black. I would play this card for sure.
Absolutely.
For sure. The next card up is a Noble Purpose. So this is sort of the white version of Coastal Piracy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's white and 3 generic for an enchantment. Reads, whenever a creature you control deals combat damage, you gain that much life. So this one's different, actually, that you don't have to deal combat damage to a player.
That's
it kind of gives all your creatures, like, extra lifelink.
Yeah, that's the only thing worth mentioning about this is that Noble Purpose has not yet been errated.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't been oracled. So if you are playing a lifelink-themed deck and you play this, you gain that life on top of the lifelink.
It's the same kind of like with Armadillo Cloak.
Yeah.
I think in that sort of stuff where it hasn't been errated to lifelink. Yeah.
And and the reason it hasn't is because it's specifically combat damage.
So our next card up. Eric liked this card. So Puppet's Verdict, red and generic for an instant. Flip a coin. If you win the flip, destroy all creatures with power 2 or less. If you lose the flip, destroy all creatures with power 3 or less.
3 or greater.
Or 3 or greater. So kind of a wrath.
Yeah,
it's unreliable rat.
Yeah, it's for your Kark's Thumb coin flipping deck.
Yeah, or just like if you're playing the random deck, which I know a lot of people tend to like to do with Norn and stuff. And honestly, 3 mana instant speed.
3 mana instant speed, maybe Wrath at the end of the turn of the person to your right. That's pretty good.
You're going to destroy something with this card.
Yeah.
It might not be exactly what you want, but...
You're doing some damage.
Yeah, like I did not notice that when you first looked at this card, that it was instant. That is quite good. There are not a lot of instant wrath. So like, even if this one isn't always going to do what you want, the fact that it's 3 mana and instant is quite, quite good. The next card is Rain of Tears.
Only really worth mentioning that it's just a black stone rain.
Yeah, so black, generic for sorcery, destroy target land. Black does have at least one other land destruction. No, it has some land destruction.
It has a sub-theme of land destruction. Yeah. Kind of like it has a sub-theme of haste.
So just, yeah, 3 mana, destroy target land. I don't like playing these cards necessarily, especially when we have like Dust Bowl or something like that in the set where you have repeated land destruction. But if that's your jam, you really want to hate on people's lands, this is a card you can do.
You play a lot of flashback. Oof, another really good land.
So we have Rashadan Port. Is a land, you can tap it for a generic, or you can pay one, tap it to tap target land. So if you want to tap down somebody's Cabal Coffers, or Nykthos, or Gaia's Cradle, any of those good utility lands, or Maze of Ith, and stuff like that, if that's where they're getting anyway, this is quite good. And again, one of those lands that the price you're paying to put in your deck is not high.
Yeah.
Just it taps for a colorless, doesn't come into play tapped, is quite, quite good. And if you play against a lot of those good utility lands that people are kind of abusing, then that would be
very similar to High Market, but it hasn't been reprinted. So if I understand correctly, I think Rashadan Port is quite expensive.
Yeah, or at least hard to get a hold of.
Yeah.
So our next card up is Seismic Mage. It is a red and 3 generic for a 1/1 human spell shaper. It reads, red, 2 generic, tap him, discard a card, destroy target land.
Stone Rain on a stick!
Stone Rain on a stick. This card is nasty.
It's really unpleasant in a Squee deck.
Yep, yeah. any decks where you can always get the card back, then...
Just ugly. Yeah. Ugly.
It does cost 4 for a 1/1. Its ability does cost 3. So it's not free, and it's not cheap.
But it's ugly.
Yeah, as soon as you get there and you start just wiping out your opponent's lands, like, they almost can't come back from that.
Instant speed, too. Yep. Do it at the end of your opponent's turn.
I also really like the art in this. He just looks like a weird dude, like, kind of doing some, Eric and I were saying, some Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, Dragon Ball Z final move.
So the next card up is Snuff Out. It is a black and 3 generic for an instant. It reads, if you control a swamp, you may pay 4 life rather than pay Snuff Out's mana cost. It reads, destroy target non-black creature, it can't be regenerated. So a free Dark Banishing, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
Not free. You do have to pay the 4 life, but in our format, that's pretty much free.
Yes.
This is another card that I didn't know existed, and I would absolutely
play. You didn't know this existed?
No.
This gets seen a lot of play. This gets played a lot. It's a very, very effective removal spell.
Yeah, like free instant speed removal. Mm-hmm. Like, heck yeah, I would play that. This is good. This is why I like doing this podcast. I get to find out a bunch of cool cards that didn't exist.
Not a cool card.
Yeah, it's okay. So this card, next card is Soothsaying. Is a 1 mana, or 1 blue enchantment, which reads, blue 3, shuffle your library, or pay X, look at the top X cards of your library, and put them back in any order.
Only you would want to talk about a shuffle effect that costs 5.
It's not even for the shuffle effect more than anything. Like, shuffling your library can be good. You know, how many times have you topped, and you see 3 bad cards on top of your library, and there's nothing you can do about it aside from hope to eventually draw it a bit. So I think shuffling your library is a powerful effect. But honestly, I like this card a lot more for that X ability where you can rearrange the top X cards of your library. That can be really, really good in the proper decks.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about Counterbalance last episode. This card becomes really gross with that. I like it in my Stitcher Giralf deck, which he mills the top 3 cards of each player's library. Mm-hmm. You can X out creatures and make a big creature. So being able to rearrange the top card of your library is good.
I mean, its casting cost is 1 is basically the best thing you can say about that. It's top fixing for 1, which is nice.
Yeah. I do like this card. It's another card that when I was building Stitcher Draw, I could not find it.
Arcadian Mask cards are not the easiest to get your hands on.
Yeah, a lot of them seems like they just haven't been reprinted in a lot of other sets. So our next card is Statecraft. It is blue and 3 generic for an enchantment, which reads, prevent all combat damage that would be dealt to and dealt by creatures you control.
Yeah, this is an interesting one.
Yeah, so what's
everything's a fog bank.
So, I mean, you put this in some sort of combo-y deck, right? Like, where you're not killing people with creatures
or anything.
Where
you're trying to buy as much time as you can. A zombie would be really good with this, where you leave all your wizards untapped because you want to use them to block, and then you tap them down to draw cards, so you don't actually care about the fact that they aren't dealing damage. That'd be a really good one.
Mm-hmm. Just sort of a neat utility enchantment. So our next card up is a Tectonic Break. is red, red, X sorcery. Each player sacrifices X lands.
Oof.
This set has a destroy land sub-theme.
It has a real hate on for dirt.
I mean, Wizards did print a lot more land destruction cards back in the day than they do now. There's still like one or two maybe in the set or something like that.
But like not to the same... They aren't reprinting Tectonic Break anytime soon.
Yeah.
I own this card. You may need it one day.
I don't want to.
I know.
I mean, so yeah, this is good in any of those mass land destruction kind of decks, like Zergo Helm Smasher or something like that. Yeah, I don't know what else to say about it.
It's a very efficient land smacking spell. Two and X is way cheaper than most people would be thinking in terms of land booming.
Oh, geez. So
yeah, you go ahead. I'm gonna use the washroom and like maybe cook a lasagna while you read the rules text on this card.
Okay. So this is Thieves' Auction. Thieves' Auction is red, 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 and four. So seven mana for a sorcery, which reads: exile all non-token permanents. Starting with you, each player chooses one of the exiled cards and puts it onto the battlefield tapped under his or her control. Repeat this process until all cards exiled this way have been chosen. So you take everyone's permanents, and then one by one, you get to choose what you want. Yeah.
Scoop.
I mean,
I'm never playing out a game where this card is cast.
Yeah, it just never. Like, resolving this card, especially if it's late in the game or something like that.
It takes ever. If you're playing with any kind of high value cards, it's very scary about the concept of whether or not you're going to get all your cards back. Yeah. Or even like just all your sleeves back. Even if all you lose is a basic, you're suddenly one sleeve down on your 100 sleeve deck. You got to go buy a new pack just for one card.
Yeah. Now, I will say that, like, I can understand why this card seems like it would be fun, and maybe I would play against it once and see how I feel about it. You can do some gross things with this card, like if you have a Homeward Path, or we were talking about, I don't remember the name of it, but last episode, that red...
Homeward Path actually doesn't help because it's all players.
It's true.
Correctly. Brand is the one that lets you take back all your own stuff.
Yeah, so you purposefully choose everyone else's stuff.
Yeah.
And then you brand and you get everything back, and then they just scoop, probably.
Yeah, if they didn't already.
But yeah, this, you know, put this into your Warp World kind of goofy deck or something like that.
Norm the Wary Chaos deck.
And, you know, I can definitely see how some people would think this card is fun. Eric and I just don't really, we don't want to see it resolve. So our next card up is Tower of the Magistrate. It is a land that you can tap for a generic, or pay one, tap it, and target creature gains protection from artifacts until end of turn. So what you do with this card, Eric was saying, is you target the Voltron guy coming at you, and all of his equipment, or her, falls off it.
Yeah. Suddenly Kemba isn't so scary when she dropped all her swords.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, the only thing is that if you are playing Voltron commanders, generally one of the things that they want on top of everything else is Hexproof or Shroud.
Mm-hmm.
So you do have to watch out for that.
Yep.
And you know, you can use it in other situations, like if you're playing against a Brea deck or something like that.
I mean, it's helpful more often than you'd think. A lot of people play Wormcoil Engine just because it's a good card, and this lets you prevent them from gaining life off of the Wormcoil Engine by blocking. Overall, it's just a super good card.
Yeah. And it doesn't, like, we have this whole cycle of lands that come in, tap for generic, and their ability is super cheap and really versatile.
Really, really good.
So I'll say the same thing here. The price you're paying is so low for this card.
And also hasn't been reprinted. And I know it's difficult to find for that reason. Yeah, it's super good.
Yeah. So our next card up is Trade Routes. It is a blue and a generic for an enchantment, which reads, pay generic, return target land you control to its owner's hand, or pay generic, discard a land card, draw a card.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it turns lands into drawing cards.
Yes, it does.
There are certain decks that can use this a whole lot better than others. There's that mono blue commander that lets you play land cards from your hand. You put two lands from your hand into the battlefield tapped.
It lets you put lands onto the battlefield. The Moonfolk guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know there is that. Yeah, there's a couple of blue land cards that are weird. Is it the Moonfolk patron? Patron of the...
Yes, patron of the moon?
No, it's patron of the Soratami, I think it might be what it's called.
Okay, well anyway, yeah, if you can do like janky land stuff, then this kind of goes in there.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate that you can't do this with Gitrog, because that would get super gross real fast.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's okay. It's an okay enchantment. It is cheap and it is interesting
and it's a novel effect.
And again,
you can break this. This is something that can be broke. Something as simple as Crucible of Worlds means that you're drawing off of every single land that you want to put into play. But yeah, no, it's a good card.
So our next card up is Unmask, which is a black and three generic for a sorcery, which means you may exile a black card from your hand rather than pay Unmask's mana cost. And target player reveals his or her hand, you choose a non-land card from it, and that player discards that card. So it's a free kind of Thoughtseize sort of effect.
Well, you have to exile a black card.
Yeah, sorry, when I say free, I just mean you can do it without.
Yeah, you can do it without paying the mana cost, which makes it very good in combo deck.
Okay.
It's incredible. It's one of the mainstays of the Ad Nauseam combo deck.
Oh, get rid of their way to.
Yeah, let you poke around for the counterspell before you cast your Ad Nauseam. It's good in Doomsday decks. I know it gets played in stuff like the Grenzo Doomsday deck.
Yeah. It was also reprinted in From the Vault Lore, which seems like...
One of the cards they selected for reprinting from the Vault Lore, and they shouldn't have. It was meant to be like someone's betrayal, I think, is when they like unmasked themselves and revealed that they were... I forget. Like, that's how irrelevant it was. That From the Vault's lore was not the From the Vault's proudest moment.
No. So our next card is Vendetta. It's one black for an instant, which means destroy target non-black creature. It can't be regenerated. You lose life equal to that creature's toughness. I would pay that for sure. One mana, instant speed, destroy a non-black creature. Like, that card is really good. This is, again, another one that I apparently just never knew about.
Mm-hmm.
Look at me. I've played a lot of mono black, and I've apparently missed out on some pretty good removal.
Yeah. It was reprinted recently in Rise of the Eldrazi, which is why I was surprised you didn't know about it. But yeah, no, it's a really good card. I don't personally play terror effects. I don't like cards that say destroy target non-black. I'm picky like that. But otherwise, I'd play it in a heartbeat. And I definitely play it before I play Doomblade or Terror or anything like that. Just the fact that it costs one is so good.
And there are times when it's going to suck when you destroy some big beefy creature and you lose a bunch of life, but
if you need one mana creature gone,
yeah, like one mana instant speed, that is very, very good. If Swords to Plowshares and Path to Exile have taught us anything, like one mana instant speed is exactly what you want for your removal. So our next card up is War Cadence. It's a red and two generic for an enchantment, which reads, pay red and X. This turn, creatures can't block unless the controller pays X for each blocking creature he or she controls. This card's great. I have actually played this in Zergo Helm Smasher or any decks like that where you really don't want your opponents to be blocking. And again, you can use this card politically too. Your creatures don't have to be attacking.
Yes.
So if you want to play like a Gahiji deck or something like that where you want the board to be fighting everyone but you.
Yeah, this card very good in those kind of political decks, like a Fumiko deck or something like that. Just any decks where you want to mess with people's ability to block properly.
So our next card up is Wave of Reckoning. It is a white and four generic for a sorcery, which reads, each creature deals damage to itself equal to its power. So a board wipe, but not all the time.
Yeah.
I guess. I mean, you can build around this card if you really want. Like, if you put this into a Doran.
Yeah, Doran's a deck where this is just hilarious and you laugh your way to the bank. Any kind of lifelink themed deck would also really, really enjoy the effects of this card.
I had not thought about that. Yeah, that's neat.
And it's five. It's relatively cheap for what you're getting out of it. So it's a really good way to get that wrap in that if you are already doing something like this, if you're playing like Doran, or you're playing, if you've partnered up Sidar and Ikari Shidika or whatever.
Ikra Shidiki.
These are decks that really, really benefit from it. If you've got decks with lifelink, like, they really, really benefit from it. So it's another, and even if you aren't benefiting in that way that you have a higher toughness or you're getting a lot of lifelink triggers, it's still a good wrath.
Yeah.
So it's a card that's good, but situationally great.
Yeah, like if you look at Ingaric's Wake or even Overloaded Cyclonic Rift, like cards that are one-sided board wipes, you know, Ingaric's Wake is what, like 7 or 9 or something ridiculous
like
that?
Yeah, I think it's like 10
actually. So if this ends up being that one-sided board wipe for 5 mana, like that is really, really, really powerful. And it was actually reprinted in the Commander set, the Kainos and Tiro deck, I believe, which that makes sense. They're 2/8.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So our next card is Afterlife. It is a white and two generic for an instant, which reads, destroy target creature. It can't be regenerated. Its controller creates a 1/1 white spirit creature token with flying. So another, like, pretty good instant speed white removal spell. It is a bit more expensive than, yeah, Path to Exile,
mm-hmm.
Swords to Plashes, but if you're playing mono white and you do need removal, this is good. I mean, like, destroying their best creature to give them a 1/1 of flying is a very good trade. You don't like this card.
I don't like this card at all. I think that white has such better options for removal. When you look at stuff like Swords to Plowshares, Path to Exile, the Council's Judgment, and stuff like that, I think it's got much better options for removal. And once you get up into the three costs with white, you get into, like, enchantments like Oblivion Ring that can target any permanent.
Right, but that does come back.
In theory, yeah. Yes. But I just think Afterlife is... I think there's a lot of Tier 1 white removal, so much so, and so you're so spoiled for choice that... playing Afterlife is a really, really subpar way to go.
I guess we're kind of torn on this, but I do still like this card. I would play it in my, strictly in my mono white decks.
Would you play this in your mono white deck?
I do not like this card. So this is Armistice. It is white and two generic for an enchantment, which reads white, white, and three generic. You draw a card and target opponent gains three life. So I know white is kind of starved for card draw, but five mana and your opponent gains three life to draw a card seems a bit steep for me.
It's a little steep. It's good in political decks. It's good in group hug decks. Other than that, it's really garbage.
Yeah, like five mana.
Five mana is a lot.
I mean, I guess, like, if you really need mana sinks, this is not the worst one. You do still draw a card, but I think white, if you go into artifacts and stuff like that, you do have stronger card draw abilities. So our next card is Arms Dealer. We kind of mentioned him earlier. It is red and two generic for a 1/1 goblin rogue who reads red and generic, sacrifice a goblin, Arms Dealer deals 4 damage to target creature.
This guy's awesome.
He's great. The Magic 2013 art that we're looking at now is, it's better than,
yeah.
than Mercadian Mask. It is great. He's just like this weird little dude with a bunch of weapons.
Yeah.
So obviously.
What you buying?
So from the set combos really, really well with Squee.
Mm-hmm.
You sacrifice Squee, he comes back, you play him. You
really good with Cranko.
Yep, because then you just have more goblins than you know what to do with.
Exactly.
And 2 mana to deal 4 damage to a creature is good. Like, you play Flame Tongue Kavu
yeah.
a lot, and this, granted, you don't get a 4-2 out of it, but a repeatable deal 4 damage to a creature, like, that's going to kill most of the stuff you want
especially
to.
Especially when you are usually getting rid of, like, relatively low-value creatures. Like, you're not usually sacrificing, like, your goblin lords. You're sacking goblin tokens.
Yes, absolutely.
Which... turning them into flame slashes is pretty good.
Yeah, not bad at all. So our next card is Arrest. It is blue and 2 generic for enchantment aura, enchant creature. Enchanted creature can't attack or block, and its activated abilities, it can't be activated.
Pacifism on Flightroids.
Yeah, so we had mentioned before that I had my God of the Police deck that was all about... I tried to grab as many cards that said prison or arrest or any stuff like that as possible. So that's when I first actually played Arrest. And it turns out... getting rid of activated abilities on creatures is a really strong effect.
Very relevant, yes.
I mean, it helped that I was playing against your Borborygmos deck.
Oh, yeah. Bobo Enrage did not like being arrested.
Yeah, so stopping... In that situation, it was so much better than killing the creature because you were playing a bunch of ramp, you could just play him again. But if you stop him from attacking, blocking, or using activated abilities, that just completely shuts down that creature until you can...
find a way to kill it, yeah.
Yeah, so I would absolutely play this card again, actually, even outside of that kind of jokey police mm-hmm. deck. I think it's good. And there's Arrest and Prison Term, I believe, does the same thing.
Prison Term, I think, is different costed, though. Prison Term is...
maybe it's white engineering.
Yeah, exactly.
So next up, we have Battle Rampart. It is red and 2 generic for a creature wall. It's a 1/3 with Defender, of course. And you can tap it to give a target creature haste until end of turn.
You wanted to talk about
this card. Yeah, I just think that if you're playing a deck that really wants haste, like I have played Heartless Shidetsugu before, which is a deck that wants haste more than anything else almost. This is actually not the worst one, like a 3 mana creature, which can defend a bit in the early game and stuff like that, and just simply taps to give a creature haste is quite good.
My problem is that there's a goblin that does this. That costs the same amount, and goblin's a relevant tribe, so I prefer that.
Over a wall? Yeah, sure.
Aki Taskmaster or something like that. It's got really, really funny flavor text, too, and its whole thing is just tap to...
I'm just saying that if you're playing a deck that wants such a high amount of haste enablers, this is not the worst one.
No.
Ooh, next up is the
saucy card.
Favorite card of mine for sure. We have Black Market. It is black, black, and 3 generic for an enchantment, which reads, whenever a creature dies, put a charge counter on Black Market. And then at the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, add black to your mana pool for each charge counter on Black Market. So this card is obviously very, very strong. However, it is one of those cards that's so strong that nobody will let you
run away.
We'll let it get out of hand.
Yeah, a lot of people blow it up. This is true.
But if you're playing a deck that, you know, sacrificing creatures or playing stuff like Fleshbag Marauder and that sort of thing, you can very quickly get a lot of charge counters on this thing.
I've definitely seen this card get out of hand very quickly.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of similar to that Braid of Fire from Cold Snap, but this one's better because you don't add the mana on your upkeep. You do it at the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, so you can still use it. So, you know, if you're playing in a meta that doesn't run a lot of enchantment removal,
this would encourage your meta to change that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Very, very powerful. I played it in my Kothafed deck, which wants to destroy creatures anyway. And this just gets out of hand so bad. So our next card is a Blood Oath. It is red and three generic for an instant, which reads, choose a card type. Target opponent reveals his or her hand. Blood Oath deals three damage to that player for each card of the chosen type revealed this way. So I kind of just want to bring this up because I was listening to something, and they mentioned that they had a Blood Oath Storm Cauldron deck.
Yes.
And what Storm Cauldron says is that whenever you tap a land for mana, return it to your hand, and each player can play an additional land.
Yes.
So people tap out to play something big, they have a bunch of lands in your hand, and then you play Blood Oath and just...
And just watch them...
Cry.
Cry.
Now it is only target opponent, it is very situational, so I'm not saying put it in every deck, but...
But Bobo and Rage usually play Storm Cauldron anyway.
Yeah, so, hey.
Hey.
Burn a bunch of people up.
Do it.
So our next card up is Bog Witch. Is black and two generic for a 1/1 human spell shaper. Reads black, tap it, discard a card, add the black to your mana pool. So dark ritual on a creature.
Dark ritual on a creature. That's really powerful in black. That's some really, really good ramp.
Absolutely. And again, like black doesn't care about discarding cards so much. Yeah. Very, very, very strong. So next card up is just a brainstorm.
Yep, got reprinted.
Yep, blue mana instant, draw three cards, and then put two cards from your hand on top of your library in any order. Just wanted to call out that it was reprinted in the set. Very strong card. Will always and forever be. It goes in pretty much every blue deck.
Yeah, maybe, I personally think it's the best of those blue cards. I prefer it over Preordain and Ponder. Like, yeah, Ponder, Preordain, or Brainstorm. Brainstorm's the best to me just because it's instant speed.
I do like Ponder because it lets you shuffle your library if you need to. Mm-hmm. I have played Brainstorm enough times where I draw, you know, like three lands. I'm like, well, there's nothing I can do with this.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying it's bad. It's obviously very good, but just the fact that you have that option of shuffling with Ponder is very powerful. So our next card up is Brawl. It is red, three generic for an instant, which reads, until end of turn, all creatures gain. Tap, this creature deals damage equal to its power to target creature. This card's just a good time.
Yeah, everyone gets to fight.
So you can put this into a deck with a bunch of big creatures, and in theory you have the biggest ones and can fight a bunch of stuff. I think it's more fun in, like, not a creatureless deck, but say, like, you know, somehow people get rid of your board. Everyone else still has stuff, and you're like, hey, you guys fight it out.
Or a token deck where you have a bunch of goblins, and you just tap all of them and deal one damage to, and just stack it on something.
Yep. And I do, I kind of like the idea of it of, like, you play the card, and then it's like, who's going to do it first? Because all the creatures have the ability, so it's just like, I do it, response, I do this, and then it just gets super out of hand.
The stack looks like the most horrid mess you've ever seen.
And I do like that there's an opposite side to that card called Shoving Match.
Oh, which is the blue one.
Card, and it gives all creatures tap target creature
just
until end of turn.
A wussified brawl.
Yeah, so it's like all these weenie blue creatures like slapping each other, whereas the red creatures are actually like killing each other and stuff. I think it's a fun like kind of two sides of the coin. So our next and last card is probably the strongest card in the set.
I would say so.
It is called Bribery. It is a blue, three generic for a sorcery. It reads, search target opponent's library for a creature card and put that card onto the battlefield under your control. Then that player shuffles through her library.
One of the best blue cards ever printed.
Yeah, it's like being able to grab the best, biggest threat from any opponent's library.
Tutor an opponent's library for their highest value creature and play it for free.
Yeah, and boom. And blue has so many ways of bringing instant sorceries back from your graveyard, so you're not just going to cast this card once, you're going to continually grab the best things from your opponent's decks. It's really gross. I had recently built a Send Triplets deck, which I wanted this card for. It turns out this card's like $50, but if you're playing... And that's the thing, like, it almost doesn't matter what blue deck you're playing, this card can just go into.
Mm-hmm.
Because all you do is just get the best card that anyone at the table owns. Yeah. Yeah.
Blue has a lot of cards like that.
Yep. Good job, blue. Huge. So overall, now that we're done looking through the cards for the set, I would say blue kind of made out on top.
Yeah, in a big bad way.
Black did have some good cards.
Black and white had some pretty good stuff. Red had some okay stuff. Green had some okay stuff. But I think
green had food chain.
Yeah, green had food chain. But I think that definitely blue was the highest value.
So we're just going to take a mini break here, and then we'll be back with both of our deck techs that we've made based around Mercadian Masks.
Mm-hmm.
See you guys in just a little bit. Hello, Internet, and we are back. Eric and I are ready to do our deck techs on our Mercadian Masks-themed decks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we should say that we make the decks separately. We don't really talk to each other about who's making what and everything like that. So in this case, it turns out we built kind of similar decks.
Similar but not the same. But quite a few... There's going to be quite a bit of overlap, I think.
Yeah, so we'll go over Eric's deck first, and then any card that he didn't cover in his deck, I'll sort of talk about in mine.
Mm-hmm. And my deck is a mono-red deck, and I made Squee, because Squee was printed in this set, and I love that dude. That being said, Squee is not the greatest general. I'll say that right now.
He can kind of do some neat, tricky things.
But he can do some really neat, tricky things, and that's actually what I went with this deck. This deck is not necessarily as competitive as I could make it. What I did was I played a bunch of stuff that worked really well with Squee in terms of discarding him, then other cards that worked well with that discard, so like flashback cards and madness cards. And then to that I added a little bit of just ramp and good stuff, but mostly I added trickiness.
Yeah, so you have built a Squee deck before.
I have.
Correct. So is this pretty different than the one that you built? Like, did you try to put more Mercadian Masks stuff?
I tried to do more tricky stuff because Mercadian Masks is a set about treachery and kind of like politicking and stuff. So there's cards in this like Jeering Instigator, which is the Morph Zealous Conscripts card. There's Zealous Conscripts. There's Dual Caster Mage, Wild Ricochet, cards, Reverberate, cards that I don't normally put in my decks.
Sure.
But they are in here for the specific purpose of trying to get some sneaky trickiness in.
Sure, like trying to take your opponent's stuff or use your opponent's stuff against them.
Exactly, or catching them off guard. Mass Mutiny and Insurrection are in there for the same reasons.
Sure.
Then there's just lots of stuff that... I'll go through the stuff that discards first, and then I'll go through stuff that works well with the discard. So Mad Prophet is in here. Duretti is in here. Magus of the Wheel is a discard effect. Seismic Mage is a discard effect. We've got Wolf of Devil's Breach is a newly printed one that works
totally
really well with Squee.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's whenever he attacks, you may pay 2 and discard a card. If you do, you deal, damage equal to target creature or planeswalker equal to the converted mana cost of the discard card. So essentially, he lets you, incinerate.
Yeah.
If you're discarding Squee. Yeah. Or you can discard something bigger. Nullspine Invocation is a very similar card. You pay X and discard a card with converted mana cost X, and then deal X damage to target creature or player. Rite of the Raging Storm is kind of one of the political ones I put in. Shivan Harvest lets you sack a creature to destroy target non-basic land.
Wow, that's really good with Squee.
Yeah, very good with Squee. Mm-hmm. I've got... Indomitable Creativity.
Oh, that's the new one from Aether Revolt.
Lets you destroy X target artifacts and or creatures in order to cheat onto the field, or Genesis Wave X target artifact creatures. Goblin Grenade.
Because of course,
yeah. Yes. And then Cathartic Reunion, Whispering Madness, Wild Guess, Wheel of Fortune.
So you have like Avacyn's Judgment, like the card that definitely benefits from discarding.
Yeah, well, I'll get to those ones in a second, but I'm going to scroll through. I also have Key to the City and Smuggler's Copter.
so you can discard for some more draw value. I have Sword of the Animus, so that if Squee ever swings, you can get something out of it.
Trading. Yeah, like, what are they going to do, block him?
Yeah.
Be back.
Trading Post, which lets you either sack or discard Squee for two different kinds of value. Fateful Showdown, which, of course, discard your hand, deal damage, then draw more cards. But then I've got a bunch of cards that work well in addition to Squee for the constant sacking and discarding. Mm-hmm. Avacyn's Judgment, you already mentioned. There's also Devil's Play, Faithless Looting, and this was one that, I was happy that I got to play against, or that I got to put in again, Conflagrate.
Oh, yep, okay.
Yeah, so Conflagrate is deals X damage, divide as you choose among any number of target creatures and players for XX and red, or flashback of two red and discard X cards.
Which is kind of what the deck wants to do anyway.
Exactly. Anger's in here. Felden's in here to bring back stuff I've thrown away. Ashcloud Phoenix is in here along with Firewing Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And Magma Phoenix. So I've got three different Phoenixes. I've got Stromkirk Occultist, which has Madness, so I can play him that way. I've also got Krenko, who just benefits from the fact that Squee is a goblin.
Yeah, I mean, Krenko's kind of just solid enough on his own.
Siege Gang Commander also benefits from the fact that he's a goblin, so you can just keep throwing Squee at stuff. Jaya Ballard lets you discard stuff from your hand and get constant value. And I'm trying to think. I think that's basically it. There's one or two more ramp cards. There's Fiery Temper, which is another Madness card, but mostly it's just good stuff after that. Duretti is good with Squee. You're constantly discarding him to get more stuff out. But, like, yeah, it's kind of a collection of stuff that likes to be discarded and sacrificed, stuff that likes to discard and sacrifice, and then just a little bit of ramp and good stuff.
So that's it for Eric's deck. I kind of went the same way, where I really wanted stuff that wanted to be discarded or sacrificed. Mm-hmm. And a lot of stuff that could return back to my hand. So I ended up going with Olivia Mobilized for War.
You added another color.
I did. So she is black, red, and generic for a 3/3 flyer. And she reads, whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may discard a card. If you do, put a +1/+1 counter on that creature. It gains haste and is a vampire. I mainly wanted for the discard and for the haste. I went heavy on Spell Shapers in this deck.
Yes, you did.
So I got, like, yeah, Big Game Hunter.
Is he a Spell Shaper or a Madness guy?
Big Game Hunter is the Madness guy. So I got Cackling Witch.
Bog Witch.
Which lets you discard a card and give a creature +X/+0 until end of turn. Jeez, I have Instigator, which makes creatures attack this turn if able. I have Giant Ballard in here.
Greal the Mindraker, yep. And Latula, Keldon Overseer.
Yep, which they lets both you deal X damage to a creature or player.
Or Greal, which lets you Mind Twist.
Yep. I got Notorious Assassin in here. Basically, just like any of the kind of playable Spell Shapers, and even some that are kind of not super great. I got Spark Spitter, which you can discard a card to make it 3/1. With Trample and Haste and Sacrifices at the end. I have Squee in here. And then aside from the stuff that lets you discard, it's a lot of stuff that can come back from the graveyard. So I have, like, Ashen Ghoul, which if he is in your graveyard with three or more creatures above him, you can pay a black on your upkeep and return to the battlefield. You know, I have, like, Bloodghast, Reassembling Skeleton. I also put Anger and Filth in this deck, which both...
Filthy and Angry.
Yeah. And obviously with Filth, I have Urborg, Tomb of Yawgmoth, so that all my guys can get Swampwalk. I have Firewing Phoenix again that Eric said, which can return from your graveyard to your hand. I have Magma Phoenix, which is another Phoenix that can return from your graveyard to your hand. I put Runehorn Hellkite in here, which you can pay 5 generic and a red, exile it from your graveyard, and then everyone Wheel of Fortunes.
Mm-hmm.
So if my hand is getting empty, I can re-up again. Or if I want to, like, if I have cards with Madness in my hand, I can return them.
Mm-hmm.
I can play them and then draw 7 new cards. I put Sanitarium Skeleton, which is terrible. It's a 1 mana 1/2, but you can pay 3, return from your graveyard to your hand. And actually a card that fits really well in this deck that I found specifically for Olivia, because I had thought about making an Olivia deck before this, and it's called Veilborn Ghoul, and it's sort of similar to Bloodghast, when a swamp enters the battlefield under your control, it goes from your graveyard, but with this one, it goes back to your hand. So for Olivia, so long as I'm playing swamps, it can keep powering all of my spell shavers or my Olivia giving stuff haste.
Yeah, that's super good.
Yeah, I thought that was a neat find for sure. I'm also running Duretti, and then just some blacks, kind of good stuff, Phyrexian Reclamation to get my creatures that I'm discarding back to my hand.
Two copies of Phyrexian Arena?
Apparently two copies of Phyrexian Arena. Oversoul Cemetery, Black Market in here. And I do also have just some cards from Mercating Mask that don't do a whole lot in the deck, but I did want to feel kind of more Mercating Mask as well. So Crash, which I can sacrifice a mountain to destroy a target artifact. Or sorry, it costs 3 instant speed, or I can sacrifice a mountain rather than paying its mana cost to destroy a target artifact. Got Dark Ritual, Dark Withering, which I can destroy a non-black creature, and this madness cost is just 1 black. So basically just a lot of madness stuff, a lot of discarding and getting stuff back from my graveyard. So in theory, I can just keep rotating through stuff and never really run out of cards. If I do run out of cards, actually, I did put in Gyarapur Orrery, which is a 4 mana artifact, which means each player may pay an additional land on each of their turns. And then at the beginning of each player's upkeep, if that player has no cards in hand, that player draws 3 cards. So I bet if I really wanted to, I could empty my hand fast.
You could enter and go Hellbent.
I could go Hellbent. And I actually do have 1 Hellbent card in this deck.
Oh, no.
Which is Keldon Megaliths, which enters the battlefield tapped. You can tap it for a red. Or if you're Hellbent, you can pay a red and 1, tap it, and it deals 1 damage to a target creature or player. But you can only do when you're Hellbent.
Seems like high value there.
I mean, I'm going to be Hellbent anyway. Sometimes you just need to kill a creature.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah, I actually think this deck is real fun. Like, I would probably build this deck and play it, maybe take out some of the not-so-good Mercating Mask spell shapers and put in just more stuff that either wants haste or wants to go to the graveyard. And I think this deck could be actually super, super fun.
Yeah.
When I was trying to look at for Olivia cards, so many people were just building Vampire Tribal, but I think you can build it in this kind of neat Rakdos, like recursion, graveyard to hand battle.
Yeah, absolutely.
To graveyard to hand sort of thing. I think it could be a whole lot of fun.
Absolutely. I think this is a general that I'm very interested in.
So I think that is just about going to do it for our Mercadian Masks retrospective.
Yes, this has been a long episode.
Yeah, I was sort of surprised. There was a whole lot more to talk about than I would have originally thought for Mercadian Masks. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad we did it. So, we've done the set review and everything. How do you feel about the set overall? Now that we're at the end.
Set had some really good lands in it and some really good blue cards. And overall, the biggest thing I just think is that not enough cards from Mercadian Mask have been reprinted.
Yeah, especially because, like, as we were saying at the beginning, at the top of the episode, this is not on the restricted list, so they can reprint as much as they want.
Yeah, but we haven't seen any Tower of the Magistrate reprints. We haven't seen any Rishadin Port reprints.
Have they done any From the Vaulted Lands?
Yes.
Oh, never mind. I was going to say, they could do another one.
They've already done From the Vaulted Realms.
Yeah, I actually really like this set too, and again, like, this set more than in Cold Snap ended up finding cards that I did not know existed, and cards that I want to actively go out and get now, and I think that's going to be kind of a recurring thing when we do these episodes, is finding these gems left in the dust, as they say.
Do they say that?
I do. I just did.
Yeah, but are you enough to qualify as a they?
Yes.
All right.
Okay. So, yeah, if you need to, or if you want to reach Eric and I, you can at snowcoveredlands@gmail.com, at SCL Podcast on Twitter, or on our Facebook page, facebook.com/snowcoveredlands. And as always, you can catch our deck lists on Tapped Out, and we'll put it into the show notes of wherever this ends up getting posted again.
Yeah.
We have some things in the motion.
Yeah.
Wheels in motion. We'll let you
some
guys know.
Some things in the motion?
Yeah.
Some things are located within the motion. Yeah. That's where we left them.
Yeah. It's been a long morning.
Yeah.
Eric, where else can they get at you?
They can get a hold of me on CommanderCast for my other show there that I do with Noel Clausen called Rivals Duel, a show about me and my American friend arguing, yeah. As opposed to me and my Canadian friend arguing. Only when you like bad cards.
Sure.
They can get hold of me at the Facebook page for that at facebook.com/rivalsduel. And I'm on Twitter and on Gmail at ericbonvy@gmail.com or at thatbonvyguy on Twitter.
You're bad at selling yourself.
I mean, it took
you way too long to get there.
You can go find me there if you want. Go listen to my other podcast. That's basically all you need to do.
Yeah.
Listen to this podcast and listen to my other podcast and Like, if you really, really want to ask me a question, you can send it to me on Gmail, and I'll answer it somewhere.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, thanks so much for listening, everyone. And until next time, breathe the snow, friends. Welcome to the Snow Covered Lands podcast, episode 1. Nope, that's not right.
Mm.